using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Thursday, the 4th of November, year of our Lord 2021, day 598 of America Held Hostage. Well, there is something new, a new angle to come after and punish the unvaccinated, and that is to deny them health insurance if they die from allegedly from COVID, if they die with a positive PCR test and they were not vaccinated, deny them death benefits. We're also going to have coming up in the program in the second hour, we're going to have an interview with a licensed professional engineer, 45 years experience in emergency power. We're going to talk about being off the grid, off-grid power, and also, most importantly, how to protect it from something like an EMP pulse. So stay with us. We've got some practical advice today, as well as a look at what is being done to attack us and to push us out of society. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I want to begin with some news and some updates to the election results on Tuesday. One of the most interesting ones, I think, certainly the most important one, was the amendment to the Maine Constitution saying we have a right to produce and to grow and to our own food and to eat whatever we wish and to, you know, we have food freedom, food rights, if you will. That is very important. Because understand that the same corrupt and evil bureaucracy, the Food and Drug Administration, has for decades been on a crusade to stop people who are competing against Big Agra, just like they are on a crusade to stop you from having ivermectin. I have reported over the years the FDA and other state agricultural industries coming against people who are growing their own pigs in a natural way instead of a factory farm way, coming after people who are producing raw milk, and on. We could go over this over and over again. Or local jurisdictions coming after people who are growing their own food. So that is a very, very important thing to do. It is something that you need to work with people in your state, in your community, to make sure that those rights are protected. But I want to take a quick look at some of the election results. And I think one of the more interesting ones that's got everybody looking at this in terms of a bellwether of the of just how unpopular Democrats have become in New Jersey. That is deeply Democrat you're going to find anywhere. And the state Senate president, Steve Sweeney, who has led the state Senate since 2010. So he's been leader of the Senate for 11 years. He's been there longer than that. He's got a very tight race with a GOP challenger who spent $153 on his campaign. And he spent most of that at, he spent all of it at either Dunkin' Donuts or buying paper supplies. And he said most of it was spent at Dunkin' Donuts. It kind of reminds me of the letter that I got yesterday from the retired highway patrol officer, very well known in his community for helping people. He agreed to put his name on the ballot, but he didn't campaign. He said he didn't deny that he was running if anybody asked him, but he still came in second place. Well, this guy came in first place. He went around and talked to people a little bit, and he's just a truck driver, an ordinary guy. The vote totals are still being dickered with by the Democrats. As a matter of fact, here's what he had to say in his very first interview, and then we'll tell you what they're doing to the vote totals.
I have no idea what's going on. I am really trying to grasp all this. I knew it would be a major upset. And the funny thing is whenever I went around the door to door, everybody, the first words out of their mouth was, good luck. Like, they knew the political power that was being wielded down here. I would get people who sent me $50, sent me $25. They said, listen, I don't like the guy. I want to see you do well. And so I did what I could.
You're a Harley Riding Eagles fan who's a truck driver.
I mean, we don't have some real people in these state houses.
I've said this before. I'm as blue collar as you're ever going to find.
That's what we need. You're thinking we need more real people doing real jobs who are really suffering and they know the price of a gallon of milk?
I'm not against lawyers or doctors or business people, but that's not what we need. We need people who understand the adverse effects of what's going on in this state.
Are you prepared for the onslaught of attention? Because we're doing
I'm not prepared for this right now. This has been a little, like I said, I went to bed being told certain numbers, and now I'm being told other numbers. They're trying to change things. I really don't know where I stand.
So you went to bed. You were able to sleep even after you thought you won this race by a couple of thousand votes.
Well, I wouldn't say so much sleep. I was able to close my eyes and think about what is the next step. It is a little overwhelming right now.
Yeah, and of course, Associated Press, AP, I call them Associated Propaganda, they would not call a winner because they knew, you know, hey, we've got a lot more votes that we can play with here. But it was reported by other people. NBC reported with 100% reporting from the precincts. They showed this guy, Ed Durr, at 52%. And Steve Sweeney, the veteran politician, power broker, president of the Senate, showed him at 48%. So he was winning 52-48. He was about 2,200 votes ahead. But as he pointed out, he said he woke up at 2 a.m. to the fact that, well, maybe not. He said, I went to bed and I was told that I was a winner. And then after they munge around with the data a little bit, he didn't say that. I'm just saying that. We know how this works, right? It's not our first rodeo. And it wasn't the first time it happened with Trump either. So most of this, if you look at the vote totals, mail-in, it's like 75% of the votes go to the Democrat in Virginia, for example, and only 25% to Republican in terms of mail-in votes, early mail-in votes. Then earlier voting, it's still heavily skewed to the Democrat. And people who voted on Election Day, there's absolutely no contest. It goes the other way around. And so the Democrats get to vote early. They get to vote often. They get to vote after the election ends, as a matter of fact. How can they possibly lose? Well, if you get somebody that is as unpopular as Terry McAuliffe, you still can lose. And so Babylon Bee headline says, Terry McAuliffe is baffled that telling parents that the state owns their children wasn't a winning strategy. They have at the satire site. They put the words in his mouth. It's so weird, says McAuliffe. We pulled out all the stops. We told parents we own their children's minds, that they're wards of the state, that their children should read horrific LGBTQ+ pornography at their school libraries. And it just didn't seem to connect with the people for some reason. He also performed a somber rendition of the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus classic song, We're Coming for Your Children, at his defeat party. I know we've suffered a loss here, but rest assured, we're coming for your children sooner or later. This idea is a time that will come sooner or later, hopefully sooner. Well, see, that's the thing. It comes sooner with the Democrats. It comes later with the GOP, because if you think that this solved the problems in Loudoun County or any of these other places, you really don't understand what's going on. You don't understand how the system works. And I'm sure that's the case. A lot of parents are celebrating, yay, now we're in control again. And they had a few school boards where Republicans won the races. And so I guess it's safe to put your kids back in school now, right? They still have the same teachers. They still have the same curriculum. And regardless of what they do with the curriculum, it's the teachers that are going to teach your kids. And these teachers have been recycled around this whole process over and over and over again. You've had several generations of people who have gone from the government-run schools all the way up through college graduation. They get back out and go through, and they start teaching what they learned all the way through. And then the next generation does the same thing. It is concentrating, and that's why we're seeing what is happening right now. It's that feedback cycle from one generation to the next, each generation getting more and more radicalized. That is what is happening. And another Babylon Bee headline, I'll be back and I'll get your children if it's the last thing I do. Mwahaha. There is no escape, he says, as he threw a smoke bomb and disappeared on the stage in a cloud of purple smoke. That's about right. That's about right. And let me tell you, your children are not safe in a government school. Neither are your neighbor's children. We need to defund the schools, period. Period. If you don't take control of things yourself, you're going to be used in this system. And that's whether you're talking about health care, whether you're talking about growing your own food, growing your children, what you do for a living. This system has been thoroughly corrupted. And it is time for us to start creating our own from the grassroots up. There's nothing, you cannot alter this. It's too large. It has been going on for too long. There's too much inertia. Changing the governor is, actually, this is kind of a dangerous point for these people because now it's going to put them to sleep. They were activated. They were energized when they had Democrats in. But you get a few Republicans in and you get a few Democrats. Look, I think it's better to buy a little bit of time, but don't for a minute think that this has solved the problem. It just slowed them down a little bit. Democrats insist that they need to get Biden's spending plans passed in order to have something real to run on. See, the radical Democrats are not backing down. They're doubling down. And that's going to happen in the schools as well, but it's happening in Congress. You've got Ilhan Omar retweeted a comment by a Twitter user that said, "Can't wait for the left to be blamed for a not-at-all-left Democrat losing a Democrat plus 10 state." She added a face-smacking emoji. Progressives said that McAuliffe's campaign had no rebuttal to Republican race-baiting bull excrement. So you see, that's their tack on this. We just didn't do enough. We should have pushed this racist thing again, you know, even stronger. We should have just called everybody racist. And, you know, should have tied Trump in. Of course, Trump jumped in at the last minute. Fortunately, it was too late to hurt McAuliffe, but he wanted to ride the Republican, but he wanted to ride the Republican Youngkin's coattails. Senator Tim Kaine, who was the running mate for Hillary Clinton, said he hoped his colleagues would treat the dismal showing like the ghost of Christmas future, or maybe the ghost of Christmas past. Hillary Clinton, his running mate. Joe Manchin said the Virginia results were unbelievable. He said it shows that Democrats need to focus more on issues, that they're out of touch. Then when asked about the $450,000 being given to each parent of migrant children who they're not migrants, they're illegal aliens who came across the border violating our laws, then were separated to determine if the children are being trafficked or if they actually belong to the people or related to the people who are bringing them across the border. This was a negotiation between lawyers and the government, as it was reported. I think it was the Wall Street Journal who reported it. The lawyers wanted $3.5 million each. They came up with a negotiated settlement of $450,000, as I pointed out the other day. That is double what they're giving to the victims of 9/11. That is about four and a half times what they give to military families for the death of a loved one in fighting these wars that we were lied into. But and we could go on and on making comparisons to this, but it was outrageous. The fact that a family would come here illegally, that they would endanger their children, that when they would come in across the border in a process that is rife with child trafficking, that there would be an investigation as to who the legitimate parents were. And then in response to all that, they give them a check for $900,000. And so asked by Fox News, Peter Ducey, in a press conference, Biden denied it. He denied it. I guess everybody was wrong. He said, you know, it's a bunch of malarkey, you dog-faced pony soldier. No, actually, he said it's garbage. I wouldn't do that. That would encourage people to come. Oh, yeah, nothing that he's done has encouraged people to come. Moving to artificial intelligence, there's an op-ed piece on the Wall Street Journal. So you can't believe everything you see on the Wall Street Journal because you do have people like Henry Kissinger and Eric Schmidt doing op-ed pieces for them. And here's what Eric Schmidt, former head of Google, and Henry Kissinger, who I guess we could say is, how would you describe Henry Kissinger? I like the description of Henry Kissinger that was done by Monty Python the best, with your glassy stare and your curly hair, and where Henry Kissinger, we're missing you, missing you. Anyway, Henry Kissinger, the guy who's nearly 100 years old, and he thinks he's going to live forever, and he wants to continue to push this globalism and this destruction of the human race after everything else that he's done. So they're writing about on Wall Street Journal, Eric Schmidt of Google, Henry Kissinger of every globalist organization that you can imagine, are saying the challenge of being human in the age of AI. And, of course, the irony of this is written by people who hate humans, who are probably as close to non-human as you can get, unless you were to go out and get Mark Zuckerberg as Data from Star Trek. And so in this, they're saying AI will compel even more fundamental changes. It will challenge the primacy of human reason. For all of history, they say, humans have sought to understand reality and our role in it. Since the Enlightenment, we have considered our reason, our ability to investigate, to understand, to elaborate, to be our primary means of explaining the world, and by explaining it, contributing to it. So does that mean then that if I'm not allowed to see the data, if I'm not allowed to question the experts, you know, like Eric Schmidt and Henry Kissinger and Tony Fauci, if I'm not allowed to do that, are they denying me my humanity by their definition? Well, yeah, because humanity is, you know, our ability to investigate, to understand, and to elaborate. But then we get called conspiracy theorists if we question their narrative. See, what they want is they want humans as robots, and they want to imagine that AI has reason, has the ability to understand, to investigate, and to elaborate. They want to switch places with us. They don't believe you have a soul. They reduce you to simply an intellectual being. And I think there is an element of truth in that, in terms of being created in the image of God. That understanding, that ability, for example, to create music. You know, we're told that God sings over his people. Those are things that you don't see other animals doing. Those are things that I think that type of intellect, that type of reason, creation that we do in terms of an intellectual thing, I think that is an essence of the image of God. But they don't. And as I have pointed out over and over again, these people at Google who have basically bought all of the scientists and all the projects and all of the corporations that are working on artificial intelligence, they have focused on the singularity, as Ray Kurzweil calls it, the idea that there's going to be a merging of man with machine. They want to make that happen. They will say, as Hugo de Garis, I've had many conversations with him. I hope he's a believer. I haven't talked to him for a while yet, but he wasn't when I talked to him before. And it was kind of interesting because he would always offer a question to the audience. And most of the time he was speaking to audiences that were involved in science and research and that type of thing. And he would posit to them. He was kind of like Ray Kurzweil. Ray Kurzweil has a very Pollyanna vision of the future. Oh, it's all going to be great. And we're going to create this godlike intelligence. That's a phrase they both use. All these AI experts like to talk about a godlike intelligence that is far superior to humans. And so Hugo de Garis would say, we're going to create a godlike intelligence that'll be smarter than we are. It'll be so far above us, it may just crush us, like we would crush an ant and not think twice about it. And he says, though, even though that may be the case, and even though I think that AI is really going to kill us, because he has a negative view of this, he's concerned about the downside of what AI might do. Whereas Kurzweil never talks about a negative side. It's always positive. It's always wonderful. But Hugo de Garis said, even though they may kill us, I'm still drawn to do it. And so he had this dilemma that he's looking at. You know, should I make this thing that I think is going to kill humanity. Yeah. Yeah, it's an intellectual challenge. I mean, that's one of the key things that I've noticed from scientists and engineers, even in the military-industrial complex situation. I look at this and it's like, because I had, when I got out of college, I had some job offers to work for companies that were making weapon systems. And I thought, do I really want to be a part of that? No, I don't want to be a part of that. I don't want my work used that way in any way, shape, or even in a small way. You know, it's just not going to be one of the key movers. They weren't hiring me to do that. I had a bachelor's degree. I was just going to be testing stuff, but I didn't want to be a part of it in any way, shape, or form. And yet Hugo is looking at this, and he would ask audiences, and the audiences would always say, yeah, let's go for it. Because there were audiences that were like scientists and engineers for the most part. Most of them would say that. The one time that it went the other direction was at a conference, Gen 6 conference, 2018. I spoke at that conference, and Hugo de Garis was there as well. And he put that to the audience, which was largely Christian. And it was overwhelmingly no. He said, that's the first time. He said, I've been doing this for over a decade. He worked for the Chinese doing artificial intelligence until they kicked him out for political reasons. But he said that was the first time. Because we understand what it is to be created in the image of God, and we understand how dangerous these phony imitations and this kind of idolatry really can become. So they go on to say, for the past 300 years, historians have come to call the age of reason. We have conducted ourselves accordingly, exploring, experimenting, inventing, and building. And so now they're going to shut that down. And if you think that AI is going to be your path to the future, just talk to Zillow. That's all I can say. They got an AI that is evaluating property values, and they're about to go out of business because but it couldn't figure out what property values were. See, these machines and these scientists who are making them don't understand the value of anything. As it's been said, sometimes they know the price of everything, but they don't know the value of anything. Well, in this particular case, they don't know even the price. In Zillow's case, the AI. When mob rule dictates that we all must cheer a male homecoming queen, it's clear that society is close to collapse, says Brendan Hurd on RT. And I've said this for a very long time. He talks in particular about this awkward situation at Rockbridge High School in Columbia, Missouri, where you had a male homecoming queen and everybody nervously applauding this guy as at the football game. But I've said for the longest time that what the LGBT mob was about was not, they don't want you to tolerate what they do. They demand that you celebrate what they do. It's not enough to have a live and let live. It's not enough to keep government out of the bedroom. No, they demand that you celebrate what they do. And they are so proud of it, they want to put it in your face at every opportunity and demand that you applaud. In a video shared widely on Twitter, the crowd appeared to cheer wildly as the young gentleman received his tiara while dressed in, quote, a beautiful gold gown and homecoming sash, unquote, on the busy football field. While this is not written in a way to attack Mr. Wilmore, there is a greater cultural phenomenon at work, which is undoubtedly taking advantage. You can make the case that this is nothing more than a superficial act of kindness to give a young man this bizarre accolade without any wider ramifications, but we all know that's not true. He said, I recall once being at a wedding where the bride's lesbian sister, a bridesmaid, spent the greater part of her speech not talking about the bride, but about her own struggles to be accepted as gay, culminating in crying about herself. He said, despite the narcissism, the LGBT crowd context forces a standing ovation of applause as the crowd senses the Pavlovian trigger sentiment for, quote, disadvantaged heroism. Everyone nervously clapping as long and as hard as they can, eyes darting from the corner of their faces, frozen in false smiles, trying to detect any lack of enthusiasm from anyone else. It's a mob. It's groupthink. It's peer pressure. It's all of those things. We have to have the integrity and the backbone to stand up against this stuff and not worry about this. If you understand that gender is not LGBT, but it's B-O-B, it's Bob. It's binary, it's objective, and it's biological. If you understand that, if you believe that there is a God, that he has spoken in the Bible, then you should not be kowtowing to this. This is not about trying to not hurt people's feelings. This is about living by things that you know are not true, living by lies. This is not a wise thing to do, even if you're not a Christian. It is prohibited, if you are a Christian, to participate in this. And it's not a loving thing to do. A loving thing to do is to help people to find what is the true path, the path that we've now thrown away. So, he points out, trying to detect any lack of enthusiasm from anybody else. Inwardly, I'm thinking, am I going mad? Its darker side represents a staged mockery of culture and of society itself, down to its very core. Mocking things, for example, like motherhood, like feminism. And as he points out, motherhood is not a frivolous or disposable trait of femininity. It is not something that should be devalued. We've always understood in our society, you know, even the little saying, the hand that rocks the cradle rules the world, we've always understood how important it was, the role it's played by mothers in terms of training children and raising children. So the government understands that. That's why they want to get the mothers away from the children. That's why they want to have a kindergarten, and they want to have daycare, and then they want to have preschool and all this sort, so that they are the ones who are raising the kids. They want to be the hand that is rocking the cradle, not the mother. And that, of course, that idea and that understanding goes all the way back to Plato's Republic. That is not anything new, but it is very true. So he has a quote from, listen to this quote, and think about when this might have been said. "Nothing is more unpredictable than the mob. Nothing is more obscure than public opinion. Nothing is more deceptive than the whole political system." Was that something? That sounds pretty contemporary, doesn't it? That was actually by Cicero, talking about living in the Roman Empire. See, human nature doesn't change. Technology changes, dress and style and music and other cultural things change, but human nature does not change. It doesn't. The petty reversal of gender and the demonizing of masculinity itself are treated as a kind of game by brainwashed, attention-seeking youth. If you stop and think about this, mothers are despised. Fathers are despised. Male and female role models are despised. This is a prescription, even from a pragmatic standpoint. If you don't understand this is a rebellion to God, if you don't understand this is a lie that hates humanity and wants to end humanity, you might even understand it as an attack on our society and our future, because it's not sustainable. It's not sustainable. And, of course, pagans like Xi Jinping understand that, and they're pushing back against this, banning what they call sissy men and things like that. Putin understands this. We don't understand it in our society. We are in a death cult, and it's time for us to set up our own parallel society. Media support have made it a mob virtue, but they manage it very clumsily without nuance, indicating that they don't understand any of it. They merely obey it. They obey from fear of the psychopathic status seekers who will attack and chastise them. It reminds me of that police officer in Melbourne, Australia, who at that massive rally last Saturday turned his back to the crowd and addressed the current police officer standing behind him. He said, "Don't become a private army for madmen." And these people are insane. Still dangerous, though. Just because they're crazy, just because they're goofy, doesn't mean they aren't dangerous. For the majority in attendance at the football game or other public events, there is only the anxious necessity of being seen clapping To be seen clapping, to be seen smiling madly while feeling inside the slow approaching endgame of a civilization in collapse. That's exactly right. Here's another example of this from the other side. Chris Pratt. This article by Matthew Kadish talks about what a nice guy he is. He rose from being a waiter and paid his dues, and then he had some success, and everybody says he's one of the nicest guys if you work with Chris Pratt, but he made a fundamental mistake. In 2018, at a speech at the MTV Movie Awards, he got on stage and shared his 9 rules from Chris Pratt, Generation Award winner. It was genuine yet funny, an acceptance speech where he shared 9 rules that he lives by to not only achieve success but to live a happy and fulfilling life. In his speech, he told the audience to care for their souls. He told them that God is real. Up to this point, not a lot was known about Pratt's faith, and though he wasn't trying to convince anybody with his tongue-in-cheek speech, many considered it to be more of a sermon to, quote, easily influenced youths, unquote, rather than a heartfelt sharing of knowledge. Yeah, it does influence people, especially youths. They're always easily influenced. That's why we don't want drag queen story time hours. That's why we don't want the schools telling them to mutilate their bodies without parental consent. Pratt doesn't make a big deal of his faith, but since that speech 3 years ago, he's been in the crosshairs of the LGBT mob. A big deal has been made of it after the shocking revelation that he is a Christian. Certain members of the left have latched on to that to attribute bigotry and hatred to him. Because, you know, we know that all Christians are bigoted and hateful, right? They have crafted a meme that out of the 4 major actors named Chris in Hollywood, that'd be Chris Hemsworth, Chris Pine, Chris Evans, and Chris Pratt. Pratt is the worst Chris and the least popular Marvel actor. He actually refused to give money to the Biden campaign. All the rest of the Marvel actors that were putting that together in the Avengers, they did a fundraiser for him. And he said, no, I'm not going to do it. So then they called him a Trumper. Ellen Page, who is now an icon for the transgenders, she had a mastectomy to become a real boy. She called out Pratt over support for Hillsong Church. This is a religious organization, they said, that allegedly discriminates against the LGBT community. I mean, I think that Hillsong is, like, way out there. But, you know, hey, they hate them just because they're nominally Christian. I don't recommend them at all. They're kind of a Hollywood, synthesis of Christianity. But anyway, Newsweek even got involved, calling him a dog pile. Social justice warriors have now gone through his Twitter feed to try to find anything that they can label as misogynistic or racist. And recently, it's gotten this absurd. Now, this is actually kind of funny. They decided that he was cast as the voice of Mario in Super Mario Brothers, an animated film. And they also cast him as the voice of Garfield the Cat. And now he's being attacked for that. And what they're saying is that he's taking over all of these Italian roles. You know, like the Italian Garfield the Cat, which is not Italian. The cat does not have an ethnicity. Here's some of the sample tweets. Chris Pratt is erasing every animated Italian. First Mario, now Garfield. Who's next? Has this man ever eaten lasagna? Has he ever eaten catnip? Has he ever licked his fur? I don't know. Has he ever used kitty litter? Does he have a toilet or does he use kitty litter? Well, if he doesn't use kitty litter, he's not allowed to play Garfield the animated cat, right? Another one. Chris Pratt is playing Garfield and Mario. How many Italian cultural icons is he going to take from us? Garfield and Mario, 2 Italian-American icons, says another one. Ruined by Chris Pratt. And they point out in the article, well, you know, Mario has previously been portrayed by Bob Hoskins, who is English. His brother Luigi was portrayed by an Hispanic actor, John Leguizamo, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. Bill Murray, who is Irish, was a former voice of Garfield. this is about politics. And of course, we've seen Tim Allen just get kicked out of doing the voice of Buzz Lightyear, which he's always been the voice of Buzz Lightyear. And he's being replaced by the good Chris Evans. Nothing to see there, right? Nothing political about that at all. Again, that is because Tim Allen has spoken in general terms about his religious beliefs, his Christian beliefs, how that changed his life from being very destructive doing drugs and dealing drugs and turned his life around. So, they're going to now have Chris Evans as the voice of Buzz Lightyear because, you know, that's just not allowed. Google is demonetizing the WND. They're under a lot of stress as well, and I understand that. I sympathize with it. I can't even get monetized for my podcast. I was just corporations don't want to support me. I know many people have reached out, and I haven't set it up to where we could do something like that with a website. That's why we're still doing donations. But, you know, the podcasts are set up where you can put it up and supposedly people can do that. But not for this show. Been purged by Spotify, as a matter of fact. PayPal, Venmo will not allow me to use their services. Google purged me from YouTube. They purged me from online searches. I'm sure that, my website is, you can type in my website on Google search engine. One guy sent me a thing, said, look at this. I'll go to these other search engines. And, I know you haven't done anything for search engine optimization. But if I type in thedavidknightshow.com on this other search engines, that's the first thing that comes up, but not on Google. He went through a whole bunch of different pages before that ever showed up. Google is a search engine that is designed to hide things. It was a good search engine for a while. They got so good they figured out they could hide things for the government. And interestingly enough, mine was my video attacking the Federal Reserve December of 2013, so 8 years ago. That was the first video that was censored by, first InfoWars video that was censored. That was done by Google. That was 8 years ago. So I've been on their radar for quite a while, but I do appreciate how difficult this is for WND. They've been faced with a lot of issues, so we've had the stroke of Joseph Farah, who started that, and he's recovered, and now they're having that as well. But that's what we're looking at. If you tell the truth, you are going to be attacked by the people who do not want you to have the ability to investigate, to reason, to examine, as Kissinger and Eric Schmidt said, is the fundamental thing about humanity, the reason, the capability to reason. Well, they want to take that away from you. They want you to be mind-numbed robots while they push their AI. The FBI was hiding information in the Kyle Rittenhouse trial. Imagine that. See, just like this purging and censorship of WND, I don't have to imagine it. I haven't been in any trials with this, but I have seen this happening again and again for stories that I have covered, for people that I have covered. I've seen exculpatory evidence, evidence that would show somebody is innocent. I've seen that denied. I've seen testimony gagged in the Bundy Ranch standoff and the people that were involved in that. They had people who, when they were trying to make it out as the people that the threat was going in one direction and that it was only in one direction, they had pictures of people who were crouched down and hiding behind concrete walls. And the answer is, what were they crouched down and hiding from? Not from these other people who were there at the protest. They were hiding from the people who were on the ground, who had the government agents, who had body armor on, who had weapons that they were pointing at us, who were threatening us with their bullhorns. And I say us, I was on the ground. But these were people that were above on the overpass. And the defense attorneys wanted to ask some of these people, were you afraid of the government agents? And they were not allowed to ask that question. Well, obviously they were. They were crouched down behind a concrete barrier. Obviously they were afraid they were going to get shot. No, you're not allowed to ask that question. You're not allowed to ask this. You're not allowed to ask that. You're not allowed to see this evidence. We have seen this also with the Malheur standoff. We've also seen it, especially with the Silk Road trial, Ross Ulbricht. That was a very important trial for them because they wanted to demonize cryptocurrency. They wanted to demonize the so-called dark web. And so even though during the Silk Road trial of Ross Ulbricht, even though they had some FBI agents that had gotten the keys to the website and embezzled nearly $1 million out of it that they knew about, and even though those FBI agents were being prosecuted in a separate trial, Ross Ulbricht's defense team was not allowed to mention that to the jury, that there were other people who had keys to the website, other people who had conducted criminal activities, other people who were FBI agents. They were not allowed to know that exculpatory evidence. To get the kind of over-the-top penalty that they wanted from Ross Ulbricht, they used baseless allegations that he had contracted murder for hire. No charges were ever brought against him for that. He was never even indicted. And, of course, you know, you don't have to have anything to indict somebody. That's a one-sided procedure. You have a grand jury that you pick. You give them your information, and they can indict. And that's why you have the phrase, the grand jury can indict a ham sandwich, because there is no defense that is offered at the grand jury level. But they never indicted him for that. They left it out there, the media used that, and the judge used that allegation, that unindicted allegation, and that had been around for a very long time. It had been around throughout the entire trial. Used that unindicted allegation to act as if he had been convicted of the allegation, for which he had never been indicted. And on the basis of that unindicted allegation, the judge said, well, because of that, I'm going to give you 3 consecutive life sentences so you'll never get out of jail. I've seen the government rig these trials so many times. I've seen it with Schaefer Cox. I've seen it with Marty Gottesfeld. And so now they're doing this with Kyle Rittenhouse. Because, see, Kyle Rittenhouse, just like Ross Ulbricht or the Bundys or Marty Gottesfeld or Schaefer Cox, these are people that they don't want you getting any ideas. Now, you don't resist or speak back to power at all. And if you do, we're going to make sure that we make an example out of you. So what happened was, this is some footage that was obtained by Human Events. The FBI appears to have taken aerial footage of Rittenhouse and other participants involved in the shooting. Some of the footage, which is black and white and grainy, was shot from an FBI surveillance drone. The FBI footage was shown to the jury during the testimony of one of the agents who captured the footage with the drone, FBI agent Brandon Kramen. However, the FBI allegedly testified in private that they were in possession of another version of the video, one that was in HD, wasn't grainy, that they did not supply to members of the defense, according to Human Events. When asked for a copy of the tape, the FBI allegedly denied the defense's request, saying that the video no longer existed, according to the report. After prosecutors questioned the FBI agent, Kramen, about the aerial footage, the defense cross-examined the witness and asked for the tail number of the FBI plane. However, prosecutors objected, and Judge Bruce Schroeder then asked to sidebar the issue and discuss the aerial footage, and jurors left the courtroom. The lead lawyer representing Rittenhouse, Mark Richards, then said that he believed that there was other video footage captured by the FBI that was no longer available. Richards reportedly said, "It is preposterous to think that the FBI allegedly lost the footage." Thomas Binger, the lead prosecutor, then told Judge Schroeder in regard to the FBI's plane footage, quote, "The federal government is not under our control," unquote. Judge Schroeder reportedly balked and said, "I beg your pardon?" And then he said, "I don't get this," said the judge. "This is a criminal prosecution. If there's going to be cloak and dagger stuff, what's going on here?" Exactly. Hiding evidence, hiding exculpatory evidence, in order to get their conviction, to make an issue, to make a point. This is a political prosecution. It's clearly, as you can see from many other footage that already existed, as well as this, that This is a political prosecution. It was done in self-defense. He was trying to be responsible in terms of what he was doing, trying to keep this violence, fires, shootings under control. And he was attacked. He was shooting. He was doing this in self-defense. But they've wanted to make this political from the very beginning. And this judge, fortunately, is not having it. We're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
Looking for better information? APSRadioNews.com features articles and commentary, along with audio from all the top news from around the world. APSRadioNews.com.
All right. Before we go to our guest at the top of the hour, and he is a licensed professional engineer, 45 years experience in emergency power and facility investigation. He's written several books about emergency power, as well as, you know, setting up your own off-grid power. His most recent book is The ABCs of EMP, so we're going to be talking to him at the top of the hour. As a lead-up to that, I want to talk a little bit about a resource that you should really pay close attention to. This is by Daisy Luther of the Organic Prepper website. You may or may not know about that website. I just want to highly recommend that to you. I mean, I'm not getting paid to do any of this. As a matter of fact, yesterday I talked about, if you recall, I talked about the fact that China was telling their people, you better store up for food for the winter. And I said, this is a harbinger of a lot of problems that are involved in the supply chain. And we better pay attention to this because it's not, you know, just we get so many things from China that, and a lot of them are not necessarily little trinkets that you're going to get, you know, made by slave labor at Walmart. These are also going to be things that have now become, many of them, fundamental aspects, you know, products or ingredients or parts that are used to put together and to assemble things in the United States. So even though we manufacture some stuff, that supply chains are spread out over the entire world and not just China, and South Korea as well, in terms of electronics and computer chips and that type of thing. There's a massive dependency on some of the fundamental levels of that manufacturing process coming from South Korea. And so this is spread out all over the place. And it just amazes me. I don't know if I'm even going to keep bothering with social media anymore. I just putting up videos to people who obviously don't watch the videos. They comment on the title and they make the most inane trolling, hey, you know, calling me all kinds of profanity by simply saying that China's scaring their people about food. And I pointed out how they've used it as a weapon against their own people. And it's like, you're just trying to sell food. You're trying to do this. You're just a fear monger and all this. I'm not selling fear. I'm not selling fear. I'm not selling food. I'm just trying to give you the honest truth about this stuff. And I know a lot of them hate me because I'm not a Nazi. A lot of them hate me because I don't support Trump. And that's basically what you're getting on Gab. Gab is open and it's free. I don't question Gab. But there's a lot of filth on there, just a lot of jerks. who don't get anything. It's unbelievable how ignorant they are. But let's talk about the positive side of this. 350 resources that have been put together by the Organic Prepper. I highly recommend that you look at this article, The Self-Reliance Manifesto. Daisy Luther, the Organic Prepper, it's a blog, and they've been putting together, she has been putting together stuff for a very long time. The way she introduces this, she said, when I first published this back in 2016, these were important skills to have. Now they are essential. She says, the consumers outnumber the producers at such a rapid clip that we can't possibly continue like this. But who has the time to produce when they're indebted and working overtime to finance their current lifestyles in the hopes that they will finally be able to buy enough to be happy, fulfilled, and loved? They yearn for these things that are produced across the world and then delivered at a cheap price. People fill up on cheap food that has been government subsidized, making it unrealistically expensive. And oh, by the way, that was one of the things I wanted to say about the food thing. One of the things that they were so upset about, that, well, you idiot, we don't get our food from China. They get their food from us. Do you realize that you get your food from the government for the most part? You get your food from heavily subsidized government entities, corporations that are connected closely to them. A few, a very, very few corporations closely connected to the government. Have you noticed maybe in the last, 598 days, how these few multinational corporations, giant Wall Street corporations, have you noticed how they seem to be hell-bent on destroying us even more so than the Chinese? But, you know, that's nothing. People fill up on cheap food, government subsidized, making it unrealistically inexpensive. They're enslaved as they work to pay for it. In some cases, they accept a handout to pay for it. People don't care that some of the items have been produced by slave labor. People don't care about the processed offerings at the grocery store or the pesticide-laden produce raised by corporations instead of farmers. That's right. We don't want to. I'm glad we don't have to depend on those commies. We got corporations over here. They're going to take care of us. They're going to get us good, cheap food. Yep, that's right. or even the feedlots. That are some of the scenes of waste and abuse and chemicals. Anyway, they only care about their illusions of prosperity and that products are cheap and that they make them feel good for the moment. Illusion is the perfect word for it because we live in a society where many people consume, but very, very few people produce. So, as she points out, Daisy Luther says, these days, self-reliance is actually a revolutionary act. That's very true. Educate your kids is a revolutionary act. Learn how to grow your own food. That's a revolutionary act. Go to church is a revolutionary act, especially when they tell you you're not allowed to. There's a lot of things that we can do that are good for us that we can do as revolutionary acts. Just living our life anymore is a revolutionary act. Regardless of where you live, she says, whether it's at the top of the highest high-rise in the suburb or in the suburbs, in the desert, or a few acres on the lush countryside, you can still be more self-sufficient. You can learn to meet your own needs by acquiring the skills to produce. Every single thing that you produce on your own is a personal declaration of your own independence, whether it's food, clothing, shelter, or something else to meet the needs of your family. You can pick something from the list. You can learn to do it. And again, this list has 350 different articles that she's put there. You can grow some veggies or herbs just on your windowsill or on a foraging hike somewhere. So the way this is set up, I want to encourage you, these 350 resources. She's got one first section is getting started. She'll have things like becoming more self-reliant, start here, or finding the perfect land for your homestead, or the self-sufficient life and how to live it, or animal, vegetable, miracle, a year of food life, that type of thing. Then from there, she goes to general homesteading information. She then has sections on chickens, another one, articles about ducks, geese, quail, turkeys, rabbits, sheep, pigs, goats. These all have their own sections, cows, bees, gardening, soil and building and composting, orchards, aquaponics, hunting, fishing, old-fashioned skills, off-grid living, and things like scratch cooking, off-grid kitchen, how to do it when you're off the grid and you don't have electricity to run your oven, preserving your food, you know, using drying, canning, foraging, passing on self-reliance lessons to kids. And then the bottom line, she says, all of these, yeah, 350 articles in those general categories. I can't recommend this highly enough. It's a wealth of information. At the very least, think about putting it on a disk so that when the grid goes down, the internet goes down, you have this as a reference and a air-gapped computer that you're going to protect from EMP and other things, and you're going to be able to charge that with electricity, and that's what our next guest is all about. But anyway, she talks about foraging, passing on self-reliance lessons to the kids, and the bottom line is create, produce, and rebel against this evil system. The biggest insurrection in our society, she said, is to be self-sufficient. Make the way you live your life a revolutionary act by producing some of the things that you need. And again, you're not going to be able to do all this at once. Just pick something and do that. And then that kind of empowerment is going to push you on to do other things as well. At the same time, on the other side, we have Bill Gates and this article from Vaccine Impact, Bill Gates and the Uncertain Future of Food Security. Yes, you see, while we have an extremely fragile supply chain that has many, many, many links, and each one of those links has a transportation component to it, look at what is happening to containers and that type of thing. Look at what is happening to fuel that runs trucks, that runs cars, that type of thing. So when you have a distributed, complex supply system with all these different transportation links, and that is true globally as well as domestically, you're missing one part and you can't finish that car. So it sits there in the parking lot. So again, look at this as an opportunity to eat better, an opportunity to get out of the clutches of people like Bill Gates, who has worked for the longest time to make you his slave, to mark you with an ID, to make sure that you are going to be vaccinated. He had his ID 2020, everybody globally with an ID. IA 2030, everyone, everywhere, every age vaccinated. And this guy wants to combine those two things together. And he wants to also supply your food. He wants to prohibit you from growing your own food in a natural way. That's why that food rights amendment that passed in Maine is so important. Make no mistake about it, as we've seen with so many of these other things, these globalists like Bill Gates are focused on criminalizing anything that is in competition with them. They will ban internal combustion engines while they get subsidies from the government to provide you with battery-operated electric cars, for which there's insufficient grid to operate it, which means that you're going to have very, very few of these cars, that they will be operated by the elite. If you can afford to have a car, you will not be able to drive it because they'll be taxing you by the mile to make sure one way or the other they're going to restrict your transportation. And they will do that with your food as well. He wants you to eat bugs. He wants you to eat his lab meat. And he uses the government to shut down competition. He uses the government to take away your choice in the same way they're taking your choice away right now with the vaccines. Stay with us. We're going to be right back with our guest to talk about power supplies.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via or donate via Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
Hear news now at APSRadioNews.com or get the APS Radio app and never miss another story.
All right, and joining us now is Mr. Yago. Jeff Yago is a licensed professional engineer. He's got 45 years experience in emergency power and facility investigations for commercial, institutional, government, and military facilities throughout the U.S. and Europe. He's now semi-retired. Most of his time is writing books and doing research, and he's got several books that are out there on these topics and things associated with them. We're also going to talk about the ABCs of EMP, and that is his most recent book. Of course, magnetic pulse that can come either from natural sources or from weaponized sources. But his other books are Achieving Energy Independence, One Step at a Time, Lights On, and again, the most recent one is the ABCs of EMP. Thank you for joining us, Mr. Yago.
Thank you, David. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today.
Well, I was just talking. It's great to have you. I was just talking to everybody about different resources, about what people can do to start to get independent. And I think one of the key things is independence in terms of the power grid. And this is kind of driven home to us here in Texas with a blackout that we had last year. People don't realize just how fragile our infrastructure, our supply lines have become. But now we're starting to see them break on a regular basis. And there's a lot of things that are happening with the infrastructure, regardless of what people think about climate change. What we're seeing is at the same time they are making the power generation more expensive and really not sustainable, which is what they're saying the goal is. They are making the grid vulnerable by taking away things that have been there and putting in new technologies that really aren't tried, as we saw this last winter. And at the same time, they are looking at massive burdening of the power grid with electric cars. They're pushing very hard on that. So I think that the power grid is going to be something that is extremely fragile in the future. And I think it's very important, as much as I am not behind the renewable energy for the grid itself, I am strongly about a renewable energy grid for independence, for people who are doing that on their own to get off of the grid. Let's talk a little bit about what is involved. Can you give people a little bit of practical advice about how to get independence from the grid?
Well, the first thing I like to tell folks is, if they're concerned about a power outage, obviously the easiest solution is a generator. But I'm concentrating more on long-term outages, such as grid down events, power outages lasting weeks or months. And that's why I'm promoting the idea of battery power for a number of appliances. Rather than trying to power a whole house, let's say, for emergencies, I'm suggesting to pick those devices or appliances or services that they need that they just can't live without, and finding ways to power those with backup power, battery power, solar power. So, for example, if there's a power outage lasting several weeks, if you have a generator, it's probably going to be out of power, out of fuel within a couple of days.
Yeah.
So I'm promoting the idea of having more battery-powered appliances than most people have right now.
Mm-hmm. And so you could also have especially when we look at, let's just take one example, and that is water. You know, if you're not on municipal water, if you're on a well or something like that, that's going to be one of the first things that you're going to want to make sure, I would think, that you've got some kind of off-grid power source to work your well pump, right? So that you have water. You would kind of start with things like that, right?
Absolutely. That's a good place to start. For example, if you're on a well, you obviously, they do have generator power to run a well, but let's say we're beyond that. We could use a add a second pump in a well, and this would be a small DC pump, and this could be powered from a car battery or a solar panel or a number of things. You could have the second pump there that would be easily powered by an alternative source. They also make hand-operated pumps that fit down on top of an existing deep well that you can operate by hand. We also certainly recommend such things as a Berkey water filter, some way to purify surface water. Mm-hmm. So there's a number of ways you can do this without having to, say, install a whole house solar power system just to, say, run a large horsepower well pump.
Sure.
But I'm looking for simple solutions for folks that doesn't involve spending thousands of dollars to do that.
Yeah, that's a good idea. And you cover that in Achieving Energy Independence One Step at a Time, Lights On. Is that kind of the focus of those two books?
Lights On is probably the best source for what to do about each specific item, such as how to have backup lighting, how to power a well during a grid down event, how to have emergency communications. I try to take each topic separately and make recommendations on how to have that, and also simple ways to keep it powered up if you're facing a power outage that could be lasting, as I said, weeks or even months. So that's kind of the thrust of the Lights On book.
And
kind of follows Ted Koppel's Lights Off book, which helps explain a lot of the reasons why there should be concerns for outages, but he doesn't go into any solutions. And I've tried to hit that on a chapter by chapter basis. And I've really tried to keep it very simple and not getting into expensive contractor installed systems.
That's good. Yeah. As you pointed out, the difference between lights off and lights on, we do want to focus on solutions. I mean, it's, when we look at what is happening, and a lot of people have talked about protection against EMP and, why that needs to be done. But again, I'm of the mindset that I don't think that people really are going to do anything. The people who have the capability to do something in government or whatever, utility companies, they're not really looking out for you. We've seen this over and over again. And I'm of the opinion that we have to do these types of things to really look out for ourselves. And when we're talking about power being out, I mean, I've been in situations in the past with storms where this has gone on for several days. You know, we were in a very shaky situation just this last winter. I've had worse situations when I lived back in North Carolina with a hurricane coming through, and we're out of power for several days in the area where I lived. We were kind of the last area that they decided they would get power back to. And it wasn't even a hurricane that forced by the time it got there. The winds were only about 70 miles an hour, but there'd been so much rain. They had so many trees that came down. It took power lines down everywhere. And it took them over a week to get power back to people. So we understand this type of thing has happened in the past. But when we talk about an EMP attack, tell us why this is something. And, of course, EMP is not necessarily even an attack. It could be solar flares. We've seen that in the past as well. But if we have an EMP, talk to the people and tell them why it could take so long to get power back.
About 360,000 miles of high voltage power lines in the United States. And those are serving about 2,100 high voltage transformers. And these transformers, many of them are the size of a house. If you try to move one, it would take a trailer that's the width of two lanes of a highway. Some of them are 18 feet tall. So that means to move one, you have to raise all the electric lines and phone lines that are above a road wherever you're going to travel. The next concern is there's very few made in the United States. 85% of these transformers we import from South Korea, Germany, a couple other countries. So they're not made here.
Yeah.
They also are custom made. There's not like one standard transformer. These 2100 transformers are all different. It's like changes in their orientation or positions and voltages and current ratings. So they're all custom made, custom designed, and it takes up to 2 years to replace one or to order one. So the concern is an EMP that if it would happen, it would basically keep it really simple. It would energize the power lines, these high voltage power lines, carry this very high current into the transformers and basically melt them down. Mm. And we've had cases of this in the past, and we know it will happen from solar storms, and an EMP is from a nuclear explosion at high altitude, but a solar storm can do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we had a solar storm of this magnitude that happened just a few years ago that hit Quebec, and it melted down several of their high voltage transformers. Of course, it was a glancing blow. It wasn't direct at the entire surface of the United States, but it did hit north, the part of Quebec and Canada. So we know what it will do. And we also know what an EMP will do. And we know that there's several countries out there that have been very active in developing EMP weapons. Of course, the other advantage of an EMP weapon is it would be almost impossible to tell where it came from. Mm-hmm. You could, for example, a nuclear weapon, it doesn't have to be a high yield weapon. It can be one of the smaller ones. If you had, say, a container ship that just kind of joined the rest of them in the Gulf of Mexico, and we have pictures of these launchers mounted in these 40-foot shipping containers, where they raise open the lid and raise the missile up.
Mm-hmm.
And so we fired from a derelict freighter. All it has to do is shoot straight up. They don't even have to target it. It doesn't require any sophisticated targeting capability. They're not aiming at anything. They just want to get it as high up as they can over the middle of the United States. So, of course, as soon as it's launched, all they have to do is scuttle the ship and get on a fishing boat, and nobody's going to know where it came from or who did it. And the damage could be astronomical.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, absolutely. So what could, and this is the subject of your book, The ABCs of EMP, and you're focused on solutions. I mean, what do we do about this? I mean, a lot of people will say, well, for a Faraday cage, we could use a microwave, but there's not too many things that you can fit into a microwave. anything's bigger than a bread box, you're not going to be able to protect it in that. I mean, what do we do in order to protect against that? And what do we do if we have some kind of an off-grid power system? What do we do to protect that? Is that going to be vulnerable? Are the solar panels and things like that, are they vulnerable? The photovoltaic panels, are they vulnerable to an EMP attack?
Solar systems are vulnerable. I've done a number of tests in actual EMP test chambers. I've damaged inverters, charge controllers, even solar panels. So we certainly know they can be damaged. There are certain solar components that you can obtain that are EMP hardened. Of course, nothing is 100% guaranteed, but there are ways. There's also, in the book, I describe several easy ways to make EMP hardened storage facilities. This could be starting out something as small as a metal trash can, all the way up to how to convert a shipping container into an EMP enclosure that would be large enough to store a lot of equipment. But mm-hmm. I'm back to concentrating on what things that you want to protect or you need, you absolutely can't live without. And that pretty much could probably fit in one or two trash cans. And of course, it's not just simple as going down and buying a metal trash can. They have to be insulated inside. Whatever you put in there cannot touch the metal side. So typically what we recommend is you have a plastic 5 gallon container inside of a 6 gallon metal trash can, think something of that combination or larger. And we also recommend using a metal foil tape to go around the joint because EMP can go pretty much in any opening. So that's certainly a way you can protect some of your smaller electronic devices, such as say a shortwave radio or things of that nature. But we're back to trying to figure out what things we need, we absolutely must have. And for example, one of the most critical items is protecting a cell phone. Now, obviously, you can't put a cell phone in a trash can and use it, but we have found that smaller devices such as cell phones, handheld radios, flashlights are not vulnerable to EMP unless they are plugged in. Hmm. So, for example, if your cell phone is sitting on your table and it's not plugged into a charger, an EMP will not damage it. We know that. Hmm. But if you had it plugged into a charger, or say in earphones, the wire that is connected to the phone serves as an antenna and will collect the EMP energy and direct it into the cell phone or radio or whatever device you have and damage it. So there's some simple things you can do.
Let me ask you, if you have a cell phone that has inductive charging in it, for example, you set it on a disc or something like that to charge it, what about that? Does that amplify it, that charger, would that amplify it and then send it in? Have there been any tests done on that?
It could certainly energize that way because your charging device is being energized and will generate a very high voltage surge. So it's probably a little bit less risk. Mm-hmm. than a non-inductive type charger, but still, we know most small devices, as long as they're not plugged into anything, will survive. That's why I recommend battery-powered devices for emergency use. The problem is today, most people have gotten away. The only thing we have battery-powered in their house is a remote control for television and the charger and their cell phone. But there's many, many things you can get. For example, if you look at an RV or a truck camper or something like that, everything in there it has a television, DVD player, satellite internet, air handling unit, radio, flat screen monitors. All of that is basically runs off a 12-volt battery. Mm-hmm. So RV stores are a good source to pick up things such as a flat screen television. And a DVD player, for example, or a satellite receiver, things that you could use, but they can be operated from a 12-volt battery. And then there's a lot of ways we can keep that charged up during an extended power outage. And also is to charge a cell phone. People are used to cell phone being charged up every night, but if the grid's down, there's no way you're going to charge it. Mm-hmm. And so a simple solution would be a fold-up solar panel. It's small enough, EMP is not going to damage it, but you can unfold it and use it every day to keep a cell phone charged up without any trouble at all.
Let me ask you this. I mean, you're talking about shortwave radio, and of course, if you can keep your shortwave radio working, and if somebody else has got one, you're good. But what if you keep your – and I'm surprised that the cell phones are only vulnerable when charging – but let's assume that this doesn't hit while you're charging and your cell phone is still good. Is the network going to be there? I mean, what?
We kind of skipped over that, didn't we? I certainly was making the assumption that the cell tower should be still be functional. Of course, during a normal grid down event or power outage, a lot of your cell towers, especially in more populated areas, do have generator power, at least for several days, or some of them as long as a week, but most of them several days. But yes, cell towers can be damaged from an EMP, no doubt about it. Mm-hmm. The testing that's been done has damaged them, but it doesn't melt the whole tower down. It basically damages some of the front end equipment that's connected to the antenna section, and these can be the components can be replaced. But mm-hmm. again, we're talking about if an EMP would actually hit, there would be thousands of these towers that would have to be repaired, and that's probably not going to be feasible. So we're back to having a good AM/FM shortwave radio probably as our main source of communications, yeah. At least to begin.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, getting back to the phones again, you say that they're vulnerable – only when they're being charged. Is there any safe way to charge the phones? Because you're not going to know when it's going to be kind of a little bit of Russian roulette here. If an EMP or something like that were to happen, maybe you're charging your phone, it's gone. But is there any safe way to charge it in case something like that is happening? Safe practice.
That's a good question. I think that it is going to be a little Russian roulette because if it's plugged in, if there's a wire connected to it and an EMP event does happen, mm-hmm. it definitely is going to get fried. So, mm-hmm. Other than having a backup phone in a Faraday cage, I'm not sure what would be a possibility there.
Right.
I think it's going to be just the luck of the draw. And same thing with EMP.
If you have a backup phone, I guess maybe it could be a burner phone. It could be the exact opposite of what burner usually means, right? It's the phone that doesn't get burned. I don't know. But I was surprised about the phones. Let's talk a little bit about cars. I mean, there's a lot of electronics in cars. What have tests shown in terms of cars? Is there any hope there?
Well, the EMP Commission, which happened a few years back, they tested it pretty much everything from locomotive engines to automobiles to SCADA operated control systems. They tested everything, and these were real tests. They were not some type of analytical study. They actually, there are EMP chambers that you can put equipment into and bombard them with this high energy force and duplicated the effects of the EMP energy wave. And on automobiles, they tested over 200 vehicles, some pickup trucks and cars. And there are several things that resulted from that. All of these were from about 1980, I think it was 85, 86 vintage on, mm-hmm. but not anything current. So there haven't been any testing done by the EMP Commission on later model vehicles, which are really full of electronics today.
Oh, yeah. Well, you wouldn't say not anything current. At what point they went from about 1985 on up to about what year?
I think it was around 2000, probably around, I think it was around 1998, somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Not anything in the past, 15 years.
Yeah, there's been a world of change, in terms of electronics.
Still, pretty much everything after 73, we started going in more electronics, electronic mm-hmm. transistor ignition, electronic ignition. But it doesn't matter what they discovered would be applicable to even, cars today in some ways. And the first thing they discovered was most of the cars, not all of them, but most of the cars did not have damage or as much damage if the car was not running at the time.
Huh.
So if it was just turned off.
Uh-huh.
There's some shielding. Today cars are shielded more than in the past because, when they first came out with the electronic ignitions, for example, every time you drove by an airport, when the radar dish circled around and pointed towards your car, it would stop. So they know there's effects of just normal, say lightning, or if you're driving down the interstate beside a trucker and he has a booster on his CB radio and is putting out more wattage than he's supposed to be, and he keyed his microphone, there's cases of that stopping a vehicle too. So so then the manufacturers know this is a concern just normally. Sorry about this.
That's
I
okay.
Put everything off before we started.
That's
and
okay.
It's not doing any good, is it?
Well, at least it's not an EMP, so we're good.
But they discovered that, they need to do better shielding. And so they have improved that, but it's still, it was not so much for EMP. It was for just the general electromagnetic interference that you would get, especially including such things as lightning. So anyway, the commission found that a number of these cars had, if they were running at the time in the chamber, things would happen to them, but not necessarily kill them. For example, almost all of them would stop, but could be started again. Not all of them, but a lot of them could be restarted. But imagine if you're going down the interstate with millions of cars and they all stop at the exact same time. What a traffic nightmare that would be. But anyway, of those that stopped, some of them could be restarted again. Some of them could only be restarted if you disconnected the battery, kind of like hitting the reset on the computer. And some of them never run again.
Wow.
Another case, many of them had minor problems. For example, after the EMP test, maybe the electric doors wouldn't operate, or the windows wouldn't go up and down, or the headlights wouldn't operate, but the engines would still be able to be started again. But the bottom line is, nobody can tell you for 100% sure exactly which vehicle is and is not going to be impacted and how much. Even though, you know, individual manufacturers do this type of testing, that information certainly is not available to the general public. So
that's interesting. I just had a humorous thought. I used to have a 1974 Triumph Spitfire when I was in college. And it was the most unreliable car I've ever known. But in this particular case, I could always start it by rolling it down a hill and popping the clutch. In this particular case, if we turn the world upside down, you could wind up having an old Spitfire be one of the most reliable cars around. It's kind of funny what could happen with this. But I suspect that if they're having situations where some of these cars might not start again, even going back from mid-1980s to the late 1990s, that today, that would pretty much be it for the cars, as heavily loaded as they are with electronics. And it's not just bells and whistles. It's, you know, they've used this to try to meet these emission goals and things like that. I would suspect that they're going to be bricked, I would think. Wouldn't you?
I certainly would. Of course, there's a few things that can help a little bit. They do make some blankets that will provide some reduction in the EMP energy that would reach a vehicle, but of course that means you'd have to park your car in a building and cover it up with this kind of a drape that goes all the way down to the ground. It's also, you get some attenuation just simply in what structure the car is in at the time, even which way the car is oriented. Towards the direction of an EMP weapon. So that's why there's so many unknowns here.
Yeah.
Basically, the bottom line is some vehicles are going to survive fairly well. Some of them will be able to survive and operate with just some minor problems, and some of them are not going to operate ever again. So I think we're just going to have to, again, wait and see what happens.
Let's talk a little bit about solar panels and things like that. You know, if you are off the grid and you've got generators, you got battery backup, you got solar power and some things like that to try to be independent. You address in your book the ABCs of EMP or lights on. Do you talk a little bit about how you can protect those things that you've set up for your own off-grid energy independence?
I do address both of them. The EMP book is more heavily involved in the EMP part of this, and the Lights On book is more heavily involved in the battery power and ways to do that. We're talking about a solar system versus EMP. A lithium battery, lithium-ion battery, will definitely...
Nope, did we freeze up? I think we've frozen up. Hang on. I want to get this answer. So I'll talk here a little bit while you try to reestablish connection with him, Travis. Just as we're getting to something that I really wanted to find out about. And of course, I was involved. Gary Haven, did a movie called Armageddon a few years ago and, used me as a newscaster as part of it. But the whole thing was based on, EMP attack in America and what would happen in the aftermath of that. It was dramatized. It wasn't a documentary. It was a dramatization. and you know what. But again, the issue that is there, and it's one of the things I wanted to ask our guests. We're talking to Jeff Yago, and we got him back. Okay, good. And I want to get into a little bit of that as well. What is happening with the preparation? But we lost you, Jeff, just as you were starting to talk about the solar panels.
I think the string got wet here. We got some rain and some bad weather. On the solar panels, as I said, we know that they can be damaged. There are EMP rated solar panels, believe it or not, and there's other things you can do. There are small devices that you can put around the wires going to each solar panel that you can get, mm-hmm. Called ferrets. They're made specifically for that purpose. They look like a donut that's cut in half, and they will basically, you don't wire them, they just kind of slide around the wires, and you'd have one on each solar panel. That will certainly help attenuate some of the high voltage surge from EMP. There's also improved lightning arresters that will help. Of course, a standard lightning arrester does not react fast enough for an EMP, but it will certainly help attenuate if you include that with other things, mm-hmm. Such as the grounding and the lightning devices that are made. But there are EMP components that you can get that are rated to be less susceptible to EMP.
What about lithium batteries? What about lead acid batteries? I mean, how do they fare with this?
I think, and maybe you lost me right there when I was talking about them. I mentioned that a lithium battery will definitely be damaged by EMP. We know that. Mm-hmm. So lithium, the reason is there's lithium batteries have some fairly sophisticated electronics within them to help maintain the proper voltage balancing and temperature charging, discharging that's going on in a lithium battery. So that's the concern with lithium. As far as a lead acid battery, whether it's an AGM sealed battery or gel battery or an open battery, they will not be harmed by an EMP. So any type of even a flashlight battery, a rechargeable battery, things in my book, I talk about the advantage of starting to use rechargeable batteries. Mm-hmm. And those can easily be survive an EMP event. And they make a number of battery chargers where you can charge, 8, 10, 12 of these like AA, AAA size batteries at the same time. And these chargers can be powered by multiple sources, such as the cigarette lighter in your car or the, auxiliary lighter in your car or, a generator or the grid or even a solar panel. So if you have a number of battery powered devices, such as shortwave radios, LED flashlights, things of that nature, and you can keep these batteries charged up, you have a way to do this that's EMP proof. Mm-hmm. But a whole house, if somebody has a whole house solar system, that would be solar panels on the roof, a large battery bank, inverter, things of that nature, that will definitely be damaged, mm-hmm. with the exception of the batteries. Mm-hmm. Certainly a charge controller. I've fried a number of different brands of solar charge controllers, which is something you're going to have if you have batteries and you're charging them with a solar array. Mm-hmm. I've also fried a few inverters. So, that's definitely a concern that I have. So,
let's talk a little bit about your other book, Achieving Energy Independence One Step at a Time. We talked about lights on and ways to protect that. Also, the ABCs of EMP. What is in the book, Achieving Energy Independence One Step at a Time?
Well, I'm sad to say it's kind of become a little bit obsolete and out of print now. It came out in the early 90s.
Oh, okay.
So it was actually one of the very first books out there on this topic, on how to do solar power yourself and battery powered devices. So it certainly has information in it, but at this point in time, it's about 15 years old.
I see. So lights on is current advice, and especially the newest one, ABCs of EMP. Well, we're talking about EMP And many people have been aware of this. While we lost connection there, Jeff, I was talking about the fact that Gary Haven had done a movie a few years ago, Amerageddon, and it was a dramatization showing, you know, kind of projecting, trying to raise public awareness of the danger with this. So it was kind of showing what might happen in the aftermath of an EMP attack. It begins with the EMP attack. And so in terms of steps that the government has taken, I mean, we talked about some of the things that we could do, and people can find out about that in your books. Is government doing anything at all about this to shield the grid?
They're doing lots of things for themselves.
So yeah.
They're doing anything for us, and they're not doing any, they're not causing anything to be done by the grid operators. So
I would imagine it's kind of like what we saw during the Cold War, where they basically had a plan to let the rest of us die, even telling us that if there's a big flash that you see go with a nuclear bomb going off, get out of your car and get in the ditch, you know?
I'm not sure the general public knows, but the government has a program called COG, Continuation of Government.
Right.
And that program has been in effect since going back to Eisenhower, where it began. And it was been updated every couple of years, but basically requires every government agency, the main agencies, to have a backup location. That is a mirror location where they could, the main folks there can get a quick retreat to and hopefully continue operations. For example, the president and congressional group can go to Mount Weather here in Virginia. Raven Rock in Pennsylvania is where the Pentagon folks go, mm-hmm. will go. Mm-hmm. And there's a number of locations around, Maryland, Washington, D.C., certainly here in Virginia,
and
Pennsylvania.
In North Carolina, where I used to live as well. Yeah, there was an excellent book. You mentioned Raven Rock. That was the name of the book, The Plan to Save the Government, Let the Rest of Us Die. And that begins with talking about one of these facilities, Big Hole, that was in North Carolina, just outside of Raleigh, close to where I used to live. So, yeah, I'm well aware of that. So I'm sure they're covered with all this stuff, but they haven't done anything to protect the rest of us, have they? Or have they?
You know, I think honestly what happened was somebody sat down a few years ago and said, look, there's no way we can help millions and millions of people scattered all the way across this country, thousands of miles apart, that we can help them survive if something this catastrophic happens. It just can't be done. And so they must have sat down and said, okay, well, what can we do? And their thinking is, well, at least if we can preserve the basics of our government and the Federal Reserve System and the banking, at least maybe that's going to do something. Now, of course, my concern is, what good does it do if all these generals and presidents and congressmen are sitting down in a cave under the ground safely there? But what are they going to do? I mean, they're going to communicate. They may or may not be able to communicate with the people on the surface, and the people on the surface, including all your military bases, are going to be in the same boat. This was one of my big concerns when I just finished a chapter for Dr. Peter Vincent Pryor's new book out. I had addressed the many thousands of facilities I have inspected over the years, military facilities, and this would be both the United States and Europe, but mainly here in the United States. We're talking about Army, Navy, Marine Corps, Air Force, air bases, submarine bases, and all these facilities, they're like cities, just like you live in. They have gas stations and grocery stores and restaurants and certainly have barracks and training facilities for the military personnel, and and they also, though, they're going to be in the same boat we are. Their electrical grid, their phone systems, their cell phone systems, their water systems, these are all public utilities. They're connected to the same sources that we are. And that means these bases are going to be in the same boat if there's a grid down event. Now, obviously, there's a number of buildings there, facilities on each base that do have backup power. And some of them, I've been to some very secret locations in this country, three-letter organizations that I can't go into, but they certainly have very sophisticated backup power capability. But even those systems that I have seen, very few would I classify as EMP hardened, very few. And so even if you have your top brass and government agencies have gone into underground shelters, I don't know what they can do. I mean, you know, if everybody else on the surface is in the same boat you and I are, I don't know what they can put in position, you know, make happen.
Well, I think, you know, Dr. Strangelove has solved this. He gets a bunch of young women and he goes to underground bases, and that's what he does. Let's the rest of us fend for ourselves. I think that's probably the plan, all joking aside. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, again, there's so many unknowns about this, but the one thing we do know, we know for a fact that Russia, China, and North Korea have had extensive ongoing development of EMP weapons. And it's interesting that it's both not both nuclear and non-nuclear. So, of course, the non-nuclear weapons have a much shorter range. They won't impact as large an area. Mm-hmm. But they certainly, for example, you could park a pickup truck with an EMP weapon on it and take out all electronics in a major hospital, for example. Not a city or a town, but I mean, imagine if that would happen at a Federal Reserve or a major hospital or some kind of military installation. And this is they have far surpassed all of the EMP technology that this country has completed. I mean, they're doing things right now that we're aware of that we're not even thinking about. For example, we have captured training manuals from both China and Russia and other countries. The Taliban, I mean, we have training manuals from all these groups that clearly show they consider EMP weapon one of their main first choice to go to weapons against the United States because it's not going to kill anybody. Mm-hmm. It's not going to destroy any buildings, but it's going to destroy our way of surviving. And within, you know, a couple of months, most of your people are going to die from starvation. It won't be transportation. It won't be refrigeration. It won't be communication. It won't be anything like that. And so our source of food production distribution is what's going to impact us. So we know for a fact these countries consider this definitely a weapon of choice. Mm-hmm. And of course, if most of us are no longer walking around and all the buildings are here, you just kind of can walk in and take over and move in. So it is a real concern that I have. It's a real concern of those of us involved in the EMP field that it's just not being taken seriously enough by this government and certainly not by the utility grid operators at all. They are not even talking about this as a concern.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me in a way of the neutron bomb that was talked about a lot, probably back in the Clinton administration, not Clinton, the Carter administration, you know, an enhanced radiation bomb that'd get rid of the people, but, you know, leave all the infrastructure and everything there for you to come in and occupy. Same thing can happen if you take down all the electricity. It's going to basically cause people to starve. There's so many different things. We have such a complicated infrastructure, whether we're talking about just basic supplies and getting building components or transporting food or fuel. We're seeing all these supply chain issues now. There's the talk about cyber polygon and how the internet could be taken out, and this is yet another example of this. And so it's very important, I think, for people to understand that the government, even though they know the threat, they're not doing anything other than the Dr. Strangelove approach. So you might want to take a look at what you can do for yourself and what you can do to prepare, at least in minimal ways, for this is yet another important aspect of preparation of things that are likely, very likely to happen. Lights On and the most recent book, The ABCs of EMP. Thank you so much for joining us, Mr. Yago. It was very, very interesting to hear that. I've known about the problem for a long time, but the specifics about what happens to different things as well as what you can do, I think that's the important part, something people can glean from your book, detailed information about how to protect specific devices, how to do a triage as to what you do want to protect. Thank you so much for joining us.
And also, I have a number of articles people can download for free. Just do an internet search on my name, Jeff Yago, Y-A-G-O, and that will be, I think they'll find it very helpful, too.
Good, good. And do you have a website that we should tell people about, or they look for your book on Amazon or places like that?
Amazon would be a good source for my books. I write a number of articles every year for Backwoods Home Magazine, mm-hmm. Self-Reliance Magazine, Mother Earth News, Home Power Magazine. These are all magazines that you can get on the newsstand, and but they have them in electronic format. So just, as I said, do a search with my name and a topic, for example, a solar, comma, batteries, comma, Yago, something mm-hmm. like that. But because there's literally hundreds and hundreds of articles I've published over the past, say, 20 years, and many of them are still very timely.
Good, good. All right. And again, to spell your last name, it is Y-A-G-O, Yago. Thank you so much for joining us, Mr. Yago. Appreciate that. Thank you. All right. We're going to be right back, folks. Stay with us. Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
Whether you're feeling like the blues or bluegrass, APS Radio has you covered. Check out a wide variety of channels on our app at APSradio.com.
I don't mind if you big, I don't mind if you small. My juice so magic, one size fits all. I'm Big Farmer and I'm here for your health. I mean no harm, I just want to help. My juice is free for you, my friend, cause I know you'll be back again. Juice is free for you, my friend, cause I know you'll be back again and again and again.
Do not be ensnared. Do not surrender your bodies to these wolves in sheep's clothing, pretending to help you when the exact opposite is true. Do you really think they want you healthy when they are financially dependent on the sheep? Do not let them deceive you. It's an aberrational truth.
assemble a doom, protecting you to death with their ungodly toxic potions. You are not their experiment. Resist. Do not comply. Rise up!
I just want to make sure that everyone has the protection provided by that vaccine.
Yeah, it's a great clip where you see all of these mwahaha global leaders laughing as Jacinda Ardern is saying that. And now they're coming for the kids. Should we call it Kinder jabs? Because, you know, they've got their own little small needles, their own special hypodermic needles, their own special vials that they're putting out there for people. And they've got their own special commercials. I want you to look at how they are telling kids that these vaccines will give you superpowers. And that the kids who signed up as guinea pigs are superheroes. Look at how they are pushing. This is, you know, over the years, I've seen all these people get upset about how certain products or certain things are influencing kids. Oh, there's too much violence on television. I mean, we had, if you remember, the Wild Wild West with Robert Conrad. He did a lot of his own stunts, and they would have a lot of, you know, extended fight scenes. And the people said, we got too much violence on television, and basically got them canceled. And but now they want to push this out to kids.
Getting ready to fight COVID.
All of us want to be superheroes. And the most important heroes are those that help others. This year, thousands of kids like us around the world joined the COVID-19 vaccine trial.
Kid power.
And when they did, they became all superheroes. Ah! To all the kids who volunteered, we'd like to say...
Thank you!
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing your superpowers of...
Courage, trying new things.
Yeah, okay, so they weren't guinea pigs, they were superheroes, right? But they're coming for your kids to use them as guinea pigs. As the Free Thought Project points out, despite children having a near zero chance, no, statistically it is zero. It is so small, it's absolutely absurd. As a matter of fact, Marty McCary of Johns Hopkins went back and investigated. They had 300 kids, they said, had died. Just under 400 at the time. It's 300 and something. And they investigated each and every one of those cases. And they didn't find one child that didn't have multiple other comorbidities. They died with a positive PCR test, not from this. So they have a zero chance, folks, of dying from this. And yet you've got the FDA and Pfizer telling the FDA what to do. I think they just need to change the way this three-letter, they need to make it a four-letter agency. Instead of FDA, it should be PFDA, because that's what it's become. It's a marketing branch of Pfizer. So Pfizer's launched the new ad this week. That's the one you just saw. Seemingly targets our new customer base, kids, telling them they can have a superhero, that they can be superheroes, they can have superpowers. And let me tell you, I find this as reprehensible as if you had a toy company that wanted to sell capes. And they told kids, you know, put this cape on and go jump off the roof, because you'll be a superhero with this cape on, guaranteed. I mean, we're talking about something that is just... that wrong. They don't have to give disclaimers to this either. Notice how clever that is. As we pointed out many times, I show you all these different brought to you by Pfizer. All these brought to you by Pfizer commercials. Because again, they don't have to list what is now known after we've done a massive experiment on people. We didn't know what the side effects are going to be before they started the mass vaccination campaign, but we know now. We know now that it is worse than all the other vaccines that we've ever tracked for adverse effects and for death, all the other vaccines combined over the last 30 years. It is far worse than that. And, of course, it's not technically a vaccine. I'll just make that clear as well. But it is far worse, and we know what those are. But they don't want to have a straight-up Ask Your Doctor commercial. So they don't want to list the known side effects now. So they do a, you know, brought to you by Pfizer. And if they do a commercial like this, yeah, this is just, a, oh, we just wanted to thank the kids who volunteered as guinea pigs and lab rats. We just want to thank them for that. So I don't have to give you a disclaimer on that either. And I talked to you yesterday about how mainstream media fact checkers are saying, well, you know, these people are out there saying that Pfizer's not running commercials because they don't want to have to list all the negative effects with it. Well, they can't do that if it's not FDA approved. And this wasn't FDA approved until August. And so for the last 3 months, they've continued to do that. After they got their FDA approval, they didn't still don't want to do these Ask Your Doctor commercials. No, no, no. As a matter of fact, you had Trump who gave $250 million to the Ad Council to advertise for them. They've already got a huge budget that other people are advertising for them. They don't need to buy any more ads on Fox and CNN, but the Ad Council is out of that $250 million war chest, the most they've ever had for an ad campaign, more than Smokey Bear, more than, you know, any of those things. And so they can use that to push this to you. That kind of money is being given to Google to push all kinds of lies to you on YouTube. They have influencers who are getting ads with Fauci. They're getting money from this war chest to push these lies. So superheroes come in all sizes. You heard, watch as real kids express thanks to their superheroes, the 5 to 11-year-old COVID vaccine clinical trial volunteers. We're incredibly grateful to the trial participants and their families. Hashtag science will win, says Pfizer. Well, these are families, these are parents who willingly use their kids as guinea pigs. They willingly sacrifice their children on the altar of Moloch. I'm sorry, Pfizer, right? Pass them through the pharmakia. None of them are of the age to consent to take a jab. And they were all offered up to the pharmakia as sacrifices by their parents. That's the bottom line. If I take the vaccine, I'll be a superhero, is the underlying tone to all of that. I was just talking about this to Karen, my wife, earlier this morning. I said, that reminds me again of that time when I was a kid. It wasn't that I thought I was going to be a superhero, but I was, I don't know how old I was. It was well before I started school. And I took my high chair. I had watched Jekyll and Hyde, you know, Dr. Jekyll and his chemistry set. And, you know, they got the Erlenmeyer flasks and all his bubbling stuff. And he takes it and he, you know, turns into something else. Oh, that's cool. I wonder if I could do that. And aspirin, I knew I had been given the aspirin and I'd felt it dissolve in my mouth because back in those days, they didn't really coat it. And so I thought, yeah, I bet that stuff could do something really cool. And so I moved my high chair over. And I remember it really vividly, climbing up on the high chair and climbing up on the counter and then opening the counter. And it was on the lower shelf of the counter because I couldn't reach it otherwise. And I got the stuff and I just started eating aspirins. And my older sister came in and saw it and freaked out, got my mom, and they called the hospital and they're racing me down there. And I'm like, this is going to really be cool. I'm going to start growing hair on my arms any minute. Got my stomach pumped out. I wasn't a superhero. But my point of telling that story is just how watching something on television can affect you. You never know. I mean, I wasn't trying to kill myself. I got my stomach pumped out. But, you know, it's this is what is reprehensible, that they would deliberately do something like this. Absolutely. One of the children who participated in the trial is not being thanked by these people as a superhero. As a matter of fact, she didn't gain any superpowers. What she lost was the ability that she had already had. Travis, you have the have that ready. One of the people that has been interviewed with Ron Johnson as he's talking about people who have been damaged was Maddie DeGuire. She volunteered for this when she was 12, and she didn't gain any superpowers. She lost the ability to walk. Can you run that clip? Go ahead.
President Biden, this is Maddie. She's 13 and wants to be a nurse. When the COVID vaccine became available, she volunteered for the Pfizer clinical trial. She wanted to help. This is her now. There are others across the country like her, but they are ignored by the FDA and the media. You said it was safe. Maddie stepped up to help America. Who's going to step up to help Maddie?
Paid for by the Vaccine Safety Research Foundation.
VACSafety.org. As Free Thought Project points out, like Pfizer, Maddie's family also made an ad to tell her story. Guess what? You won't see her story. Her story has been actively censored on YouTube. See, that's part of what they get paid for. They don't just get paid to put out propaganda. They get paid by our government to censor for another big corporation. Several of them, as a matter of fact. Johnson & Johnson, Moderna, Pfizer, all these. So they are paid to actively censor any information about somebody who gets harmed like this. We will pay no attention to that. Comcast just pulled the ad last week as it's slated to run before the FDA's Vaccines and Related Biological Products Advisory Committee meeting to talk about approving vaccines for kids. So they said, all right, we're going to show people this side of it as they watch these so-called scientific advisory committee that's been bought and sold. They are owned by Pfizer. Every single one of them has connections to Pfizer, most of them very, very deep connections, all but one, very, very deep. But even that one has connections to Pfizer. I played for you yesterday, Ernesto Ramirez Jr. Was one of hundreds of children like Maddie, and his father, Ernesto Ramirez Sr., showed that to yesterday. How he was weeping about what happened to his son who died. He said, I kept hearing more and more ads about how it was safe for teenagers. So I said, okay. Now, let me just say this. You know, people say, you're obsessed with Trump. You better believe I am obsessed with what happened last year. I'll never forget that. And the guy has not quietly retired. He wants to keep deceiving and controlling us. Who paid for those ads that told Ernesto Ramirez Sr. that it was safe for Ernesto Ramirez Jr. to get these? That was coming from Trump. Trump is still the ad man. He's the pitch man. He's the salesman. As I said yesterday, Biden is the guy who has always been, you do this or else. He's been the authoritarian dictator. That's his entire personality. All of his political career has been about authoritarian dictatorship. He absolutely hates the idea of natural rights, of individual liberty. He despises that. Trump is a self-promoting salesman, and he is still selling this stuff today that he created. He funded the ads, and he funded the juice that was used to kill Ernesto Ramirez Jr. He has blood on his hands, and so do the people who tell you that it was 4D chess, like Alex. Blood on their hands. Ramirez tried to raise money for his deceased son's funeral. GoFundMe deleted it. See, the corporate rulers that we have, this corporatocracy, this fascist corporatocracy, will not even allow you to see the children that are damaged. They won't allow the grieving fathers to raise money for the funeral of his son, who was murdered by the Trump vaccines, murdered by the Trump ads. And then they came for the kindergartners. This is from the Daily Mail. He says, to paraphrase Martin Niemöller's story about the Nazis. First, they came for the grandmas, and I didn't speak out because I wasn't a grandma. Then they came for the Marines, and I didn't speak out because I wasn't a Marine. And then they came for the kindergartners, and I didn't speak out because I was not a kindergartner. Then they came for me. You have Fauci saying a year ago. The benefits of Pfizer's COVID vaccine for children ages 5 to 11 outweigh its risks. I'm sorry, that was not Fauci a year ago. I've got a quote here from Fauci a year ago. But this is what they just told everybody. The benefits for kids 5 to 11 outweigh its risks, according to an independent panel of vaccine experts. Well, no, if you have no risk at all, why would you take it? I mean, that's like telling people, you know, there's a possibility, it's remote, and it's essentially zero, that an asteroid's going to hit the Earth right now. As a matter of fact, you'll probably make a better case of that having a higher probability than these kids being harmed by COVID. But, you know, you could take something that's extremely rare like that. And so we've got a shot that we want to give you because Planet Hale-Bopp may be on its way to destroy the Earth. And so I want to give you this Kool-Aid first. Independent panel of vaccine experts. As Ben Barti says, that's just propaganda speak for a consortium of government-funded academics, industry insiders, big pharma-funded researchers who have a vested interest in this. They all have ties. They all have conflicts of interest. It is systemic, endemic corruption of so-called trusted public health experts and a government that is now owned by big pharma. We can see it in the price fixing. We can see it in the looting of the public treasury to fund private research. That was what Operation Warp Speed, one aspect of Operation Warp Speed. Looting the public treasury to fund private research to produce a product for which they could not be sued, a product that would not be tested, demanding that it be approved, or we're going to fire anybody who stands in the way. Not Fauci. No, no, no. We're not going to fire Fauci. We're going to fire the FDA inspector, if he doesn't get out of the way of this. That's what Trump did. The revolving door of big pharmaceutical companies, regulatory agencies, and lobbyists. And you can see that if you look at these pictures of what they're talking about, they already have, before they began these hearings, they already had produced vaccines for each and every child in the United States. Just as before they began any of the testing, they had already ordered, bought, and began manufacturing vaccines for each and every one of us before they began the testing. But they've done it for the kids. And if you look at the videos of this, you see that they even have child size needles and smaller vials because it's supposed to be one-third the dosage. According to the New York Times, for children without a serious medical condition, the danger of severe COVID is so low as to be difficult to quantify. And as Ben Barti points out, he said, someday, after the world has awakened to the horrors and the process of being unleashed upon the most vulnerable among us, there'll be museums that will be opened up to talk about this new Holocaust. And there'll be tiny syringes instead of tiny little shoes that are currently on display at Auschwitz. As you remember, the FDA advisor said, we're never going to learn about how safe the vaccine is unless we start giving it. Who was that? That was Eric Rubin. Who is Eric Rubin? Well, he is the editor-in-chief of the New England Journal of Medicine. And the New England Journal of Medicine has been about the politics and the coercion of this from the very beginning. They've been about controlling the message from the very beginning. This is not about medicine. It's not about science. This is except for political science, except for psychological gaslighting of people. And the New England Journal of Medicine, with this guy who is the editor-in-chief, has been at the forefront of that, talking about how, well, we don't want to mandate it through the government because it's going to wake people up. It's going to invite due process challenges. No, we want to coerce this through corporations. And they did not take his full advice, but that's what they've been doing. And this is what he had to say as they were approving this. You know, he was on that panel that approved it for the use of very, very young children. He said, we're never going to learn about how safe the vaccine is unless we start giving it. That's just the way it goes, he said, and that's how we found out about the rare complications of other vaccines. That's exactly the way that we made myocarditis not rare. and pericarditis, not rare. We made them household names because we just decided that we'd just go out and do a massive rollout without doing any testing. Here's what Fauci said last year via the CNN State of the Union when he was calling for vaccine mandates for children. Not just making it available, but they will mandate it. That's the next step. Remember, on October 2019, I won't play it for you again today, but he said, you know, was that as they're wargaming, how are we going to help the big pharmaceutical companies? You know, several years ago, he said, we're going to have to find a way to make this an annual event. You know, got to get your annual shot. We got to do that to even things out for our corporations. This is not a regulatory agency. These people are partners. They make money off of these vaccines. There are patents at the NIH. There are patents and profits to be made at the CDC. And they're doing everything they can to push these products. And they want them out there on an annual basis. That's why it was so easy to spot this for me, because I've been looking at what they've been doing with a flu shot on an annual basis. I looked, they used exactly the same playbook. Lies about how many people had it. And they cooked the books in the same way that they have in the past, and telling people, well, we don't have enough tests, we don't have enough people, look at the swab. So if you think that's what it is, just diagnose it that way, send us the information. We'll use that to tell everybody to be very afraid and go get your flu shot. It was always just that simple. But last year, Fauci said this: when FDA approval gets established, which I believe it certainly will, I believe that mandating vaccines for children to appear in school is a good idea, right? And so did Trump. Earlier, you know, in October 2019, they said, well, how are we going to do this? How are we just going to put out a brand new thing there and tell everybody in the world you got to get this without any testing? Fauci says, well, we're going to have to do it from the inside. We're going to have to do something with disruption. It's got to be disruptive, and it's got to be iterative. This is how they do it, step by step. And they'd already started the iterative process back in the spring of 2019. 6 months before he said that, this was said.
They have to get the shot. The vaccinations are so important.
That's right.
This is really going around now.
And he was talking about mandating it for children. Trump was talking about mandating MMR vaccines for children and removing the religious and medical exemptions. That's what this is about. And so they're going to remove the religious and medical exemptions. Hey, we did it for MMR. We set that pattern. We set the pattern for the mask, that if you wear the masks, that doesn't protect you. It's the other person's mask that protects you. Same thing true with the vaccine. Same thing is true with the MMR. We made people get their kids vaccinated without medical or religious exemption. We did that for public and for private schools and for private religious schools. We threw all that stuff out because of this guy saying that. Do you not see how he was at the epicenter of this, Mr. Salesman? So they'll push as far as they can as long as you let them. They're going to be vaccinating babies. That's where this is headed as well. And so the author of this, Ben Barty, says, when they come with the needles, God willing, you'll finally get it. Your child's physical and mental well-being depends on you rescuing them from the public school system and from a sick society at large. And here's an example of how they continue this relentless propaganda push. This is CNN. They cue this thing up. They said, all right, now we've had our panel. Yeah, there weren't any tests. We're not going to know how effective or dangerous this is until we just give it to all your kids. And we've already got the vaccines manufactured for all of your kids. We've got the little tiny hypodermic needles, the little tiny vials that are out there for all your kids. And now the propaganda starts. So here's how CNN does it. You know, they just assume that everybody's going to want to get this. Now that your younger child can get COVID-19 vaccine, here's how to be fully vaccinated by Christmas and by Kwanzaa. Kwanzaa. I want you to throw in Festivus as well, right? The rest of us. The winter holiday means gathering with family and friends, writes CNN. And you should be very afraid of your family and friends unless you have this protective vaccine. Until now, says CNN, vaccines were only available for children age 12 and older. But then on Tuesday, the CDC recommended this for 5 to 11-year-olds. And last week, the FDA gave emergency use authorization for the Pfizer dose for 5 to 11-year-olds. And they will say in here, in these articles from CNN, from Fox News, from New York Times, they'll say, well, you know, it's a very, very, very small risk. Well, then it's not an emergency, right? How can you do emergency use authorization for something that is essentially zero risk? They go on to say, one pediatrician that they go to quote, plans on bringing together his mother and his seven-year-old son this holiday season for the first time since the start of the pandemic after the seven-year-old gets vaccinated. And so here you have a pediatrician that they found who doesn't understand anything about risk. He doesn't understand anything about transmission. He doesn't understand anything about protection. His mother has been fully vaccinated, but he doesn't believe that the vaccine protects her. It's got to be his son. Vaccine will protect her. Children won't be considered fully vaccinated until 2 weeks after their second Pfizer dose, and each dose must be at least 21 days apart. So here's how you plan for the weeks and the holidays ahead. You see, if you're a CNN reader, and if you got this far in this argument, in this article, you are so stupid that you can't take these numbers together and go to a calendar and figure out when you got to get your kid vaccinated so that he's safe to be around grandma. That's how pathetically stupid their readers are. And so they go through the calculations for them. So it's too late for Thanksgiving. It's too late for Hanukkah, but it's still got time for Kwanzaa and I guess Festivus and Christmas. So they come up with a number where you can start getting your kid done. And then they start with all of the projection and the modeling for you to make sure that you know that you need to get. So they started out with a pediatrician who thinks that there is a difference in terms of transmission between the vaccinated and unvaccinated, despite of CDC saying there is none, despite of many, many health agencies across the world now saying there is no difference in terms of transmission between the vaccinated and the unvaccinated. And then he thinks that his grandmother is not protected unless the child is vaccinated. He thinks the child has risk unless the child is vaccinated. A parent in Seattle area is the next thing they talk about in the CNN article, plans to have her six-year-old daughter vaccinated before the holiday, not only to protect her child, but to prevent the spread to her other family members. She said they have the vaccine, and they'd much rather see the grandkids, but I'd feel better knowing that everybody's been vaccinated. So they keep selling that lie over and over again. In Colorado, Colorado Public Radio, like NPR, but it's CPR. not the kind of CPR that helps you live. This is the kind of CPR that kills your kids. Here's what Colorado parents and kids say about the availability of 5 to 11-year-old getting vaccinated. The vaccine is safe and effective for children, and it works extremely well to prevent infection and severe illness, said Dr. Eric France, chief medical officer at the Colorado Department of Public Health. Well, he doesn't know any of that, does he? I mean, the guy that was on the scientific panel for the FDA said, well, we don't know. The only way we're going to know is to give it to everybody and see what happens. So, yeah, he doesn't know that. He's lying to you. But just repeat after me. The vaccine is safe and effective. The vaccine is safe and effective for this group and for that group. And now it's safe and effective for children. Why? Because somebody with a title, some politician, some politically appointed bureaucrat says so. Vaccinating children will keep them healthy. And it'll help them to stay in school. And it'll make sure they don't spread the virus to members of their family, he went on to say. All of that is a lie. But this is all role-playing. This is all modeling. This is all Edward Bernays. Well, it's just not something I trust right now. So after they present to you a public health official, a state public health official, who contradicts what the FDA panelists said, contradicts what the CDC says about transmission, contradicts what the FDA panel says about the vaccine in children, then they... And he tells you everything is safe, everything is effective. Then they go to a hesitant mother. See how they operate this? Well, it's just not something that I trust right now. Right now, maybe later, but not right now, said the mother of a seven-year-old. And it says, but she said she won't stop her son if he wants the vaccine. Are you kidding me? So I guess, you know, I could have gone, instead of going to all that trouble of moving my high chair and climbing up on the counter and all this other kind of stuff, I could have just said to Mommy, Mommy, can I swallow a bottle of aspirin? Okay, if you really want to. Let's see what happens. For the past year and a half, some families have done everything except school outside. No movies, no restaurants, no indoor play dates, and they're ready to get back to normal. See, this is, I will get it as soon as I possibly can. So then they go, then CNN takes you to, I'm sorry, not CNN, this is Colorado Public Radio. Careful how they put out these different examples of people and the order in which they put them out, the way they counter them. It's very, very carefully crafted propaganda. Margaret Colburn says, I've been waiting to get emails from my daughter's pediatrician. The mother of a 10-year-old and a 7-year-old said, I will get it as soon as I possibly can. Vaccinating her children will provide some extra comfort for when they spend their time with their grandmother, who is vaccinated, and it will mean more freedom for them. See, they took away all of these things, and then they will hand them out to you a little bit at a time if you do exactly what they say. This is why I posted it from the very beginning. I said, you know, they're taking this stuff away so they can then dole this out in order to control some parents. Now, we go from CPR, Colorado Public Radio, to NPR. Some parents say they want to wait to vaccinate their kids, but here's why doctors say do it now. All possible objections are put out and then contradicted. Very careful propaganda to get you to sacrifice your children. Put them at risk. We're reaching a point of the pandemic where it seems that the case rates have either plateaued or declined quite significantly in a lot of areas, says Dr. Kalu, a pediatrician and infectious disease specialist at Duke University. She says, well, that's a good thing, but it puts us in an interesting quandary. Why? Why? Why does it put you in a quandary if it's a good thing? Well, because the fundamental purpose of all this is to get everybody vaccinated one way or the other. So if we have the case rates have flatlined, or in reality, they have declined quite significantly, that's a problem for these people because they don't care about public health. They'd be rejoicing if it were about public health. They'd be easing the restrictions if it were about public health, but it's not. It's about getting everybody, especially the kids, vaccinated. So that's a little bit of a quandary for them. It also indicates that it's not an emergency. So how do you get emergency use authorization when there is no emergency? She just pointed out. So, well, the kids never had an emergency. They say it's true that most children infected with the virus have only mild symptoms and that children rarely die from the disease. Again, it's not a threat. It's not an emergency. It's not a pandemic for the kids. We don't need to have emergency use authorization. They haven't done any testing for the kids. How well does the COVID vaccine work for kids? Well, why don't you listen to the chief editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, who was on the panel, said, we don't know. We'll just have to do it to everybody. I can't wait a bit, or can't I wait just a bit, to see how the vaccinations go before I vaccinate my kid. See, this is a, says NPR, this is a question that many people have. So here's what they will ask, frequently asked questions. And here is our propaganda answer. Well, many pediatricians urge the parents not to wait. First of all, because their children will still be at risk for getting sick from COVID-19. They'll be at essentially zero risk for this, and it's not an emergency, and the cases are declining. But don't wait. Don't wait. Why? Well, the real reason, which they won't tell you, is because if you wait, you're going to see the fools who rush in, where wise men and wise parents fear to tread. You're going to see those rushing fools running in at warp speed. You're going to see them getting harmed. Just like you saw that poor girl earlier. And at that point, you won't take it. That's why they want you to do it right now. You know, anytime you got somebody saying, do it now. You know, this is a one-time offer. Got to do it now. Got to sign that paper right now. You walk away, don't you? That's what people have learned through life lessons. Somebody starts putting a pressure on you. You know, the guy who said, Catch me if you can. Remember that movie? It was done Leonardo DiCaprio, but the guy who, Frank Abagnale, I think was his name, something like that. The guy who actually did it. He became a consultant for the government, for the FBI, for consumer groups. And he says, when somebody puts a pressure on you, you got to do this right now. He says, that's the first sign of a con. Two key signs of a con. One of them is asking you for your money right away. That's the number two sign. But the number one sign is you got to do it right now. Can't wait. Can't wait. This is going to be a missed opportunity. That's what they're doing. This is a con. So if my child has already had COVID, do they need to get the shot? Don't they have immunity? Well, we really don't understand the duration of immunity when it comes to kids. See, we do understand that their vaccines don't have any duration if they do have any immunity conveyed at all, because that's why they're doing the booster programs. So they've admitted that there is no lasting immunity from their vaccines. And we know that there is lasting immunity, natural immunity. If your child turns 12, here's a key thing. If your child turns 12 between their first and second dose, we suggest sticking to the lower 10 microgram dose for both shots. So you understand when they get these special kitty-sized vials and kitty-sized hypodermic needles, it's one-third the quantity that you get for the adult dose. Now, for the 12 to 17-year-olds, they've been giving them adult doses. They haven't taken this down whatsoever. Even though they have no risk at all, they've been giving them the adult dose. And so when you look at this, to me, this just kind of underscores the arbitrary numbers of this. People say, okay, well, I want to do everything that the FDA says. So if the FDA says that a child who's 12 years old should get the full adult dose, what happens if my child just turned 12 or turns 12 in between the first and second dose? What do I do? Because, you know, last week, before the magic odometer rolled over and your child became 12, you only gave them a third of a dose, but now you're going to give them the full dose. Because why? Because the FDA said so. And so that brings us to what happened in Garland, Texas on Sunday, October the 31st. You had a couple of kids, and the most amazing thing to me about this is that the city of Garland put up a pop-up clinic, and they did it at a church on Sunday, a church on Sunday. This is the Mount Hebron Missionary Baptist Church. Maybe they're listening to Franklin Graham or Al Mohler telling everybody this is a miracle. Well, let's have a miracle at our church. Haven't seen a miracle here for a while, so let's get some of these vaccines in, right? Nurses running the clinic recommended the shots to the families, and they had two boys. I said, well, you know, we got two kids in our family. We've got a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old. Oh, you can't fool these nurses. They know. Well, it's only been approved by the FDA down to 5-year-olds, right? That'd kill a 4-year-old, but until the FDA says it's safe. Because, you know, until the FDA said it was safe, it would kill an 11-year-old. But now we can do it down to 5, but we can't do 4. I've got a 4 and a 6. We can do the 6. Don't go away. We'll get it for the 6-year-old. So they did, and a neighbor who had a 7-year-old goes to church and gets their shot. And then they contacted them and said, oh, these nurses gave the full adult dose. Because even though we've made up child-sized doses and child-sized hypodermic needles for every child in America, we haven't rolled those out yet. Still waiting for the military to deliver them, I guess, part of Operation Warp Speed. So they notified them and said, they asked the ages of our kids, so we told them 4 and 6. I said, 6-year-old can obviously get it. Yeah, sure, you can go ahead and do that. But going off of their confidence and what we read on the form, we were all for it, said the parents. That's all they know. That's all they know. Based on what these nurses said, and based on the ads, and based on the form that they gave them, that was it. So this totally magic thing, it's fine for the 6-year-old, but not for the 4-year-old. Because there's only a 5-year-old cutoff date. Now, it wasn't until Monday that the Gonzalez family and the family of the 7-year-old received a call from the Garland Health Department letting them know that not only were the two boys not supposed to get the vaccine. See, they did it a couple of days before it was approved by the FDA. That's really dangerous. That's really dangerous. If the FDA hasn't approved this, until the FDA approves it, it'll kill you. When the FDA approves it, it's 100% safe. It's a binary thing. It goes from zero to 100% safe, just because the FDA said so. So this was given to them before the FDA said so. And not only that, but they gave them the adult dosage. They said the vials for the children's vaccine should have been different, and the needles should have been different, and it should have been specifically labeled for kids. Which raises a question, you know, because as I pointed out, we had a researcher, I think from the UK, that went through the VAERS database. And the VAERS database, they talk about, you know, what was the adverse event? What was the adverse effect? Was it a heart attack? Was it death? What was it? And then it also shows the lots. And you remember I talked about this a couple of days ago. They found that 100% of all the deaths occurred in 5% of the lots. And that was true not only for Pfizer, but also for Moderna, which is really strange. Because you would expect that if it was distributed like that, it wouldn't be the same for the two different manufacturers. They're not using the same factories. And if you think that it is something that has to do with a manufacturing error, that you wouldn't see both of them have that exact same ratio. 100% of the deaths out of 5% of the vaccine lots. And so I ask you, are you, when you're giving this to your kids, ages 5 to 11, are you giving them the one that doesn't kill immediately, or are you giving them the one that does kill immediately? I would imagine these are going to be the slow kill shots, because, you know, it's going to really get people upset if they have their very young kids get vaccinated and they drop dead, which is what did happen back in 2017. There was a, or maybe it was 18, 17 or 18, there was in Samoa, you had some kids going for their two-year-old kids going for their MMR shots, and one of the toddlers got the shot and immediately died, right? I mean, just right on the spot, like they were shot with a gun. And the mother that was there with her kid to go next said, I think we're not going to do this, and starts to walk out. And they pressured or coerced her and to doing it with her child, and the same thing happened to her child. Dropped dead immediately. And that became a big issue, but not in America. I don't think anybody else talked about that. Not here in America. I talked about it quite a bit. It was well-known in New Zealand, and it certainly was well-known there, and they shut everything down. And you know whose fault it was? When they came back and opened it all up and explained it away. It wasn't the fault of the vaccine companies. It wasn't the fault of the hospital. It was the fault of the nurses. Fault of the nurses. They were the ones who got the blame for it. So the FDA has approved already, in anticipation of all of this, they've already approved the first oral blood thinning medication for 5 to 11-year-old children. They know what's coming. And you just had, this is a story from National File, a good find with this. In late June of this year, the FDA approved a drug called Pradaxa. And this is to treat children 3 months to less than 12 years of age who have venous thromboembolism, a very, very rare condition, until we began the Trump shots. And the Trump Kool-Aid has made it a very common condition. And so in June, they approved this drug to be used for children under 12 because they knew they were already manufacturing these child-size Trump shots. And so they already did this in anticipation of that. The FDA said when it did a news release in June of 2021, quote, "This is the first FDA-approved blood-thinning medication that children can take orally by mouth. Pediatric patients will have another therapeutic option to treat and to prevent potentially deadly blood clots, which will be induced by this shot." I want to play for you what happened to a teen, an Australian. She was an equestrian star, rode horses. Her name's Sienna Knowles. Very healthy. She got the Pfizer injection and was ultimately hospitalized. Said she experienced blood clots all through my legs, my stomach, and through both lungs.
So I don't really know what to say here or how to say it as such. Still trying to wrap my head around everything. So for those who personally know me, know that I was super scared of getting the vaccination and said I'll hold off for as long as I can until I have to. And I was pretty much told no jab, no job, can't compete with my horses, can't go anywhere, you're selfish, if you don't get it, just get it. So I toughed it out and, you know, did what was right to do. I was a perfectly healthy, normal 19-year-old kid and have never been to hospital whatsoever, super active. And yeah, I got my second jab on the 21st, midnight that night. I woke up vomiting, fevers. My whole body was shaking. I felt like I'd run a marathon. My legs were sore, my joints were sore. I had blurry vision and a really bad headache and just pain all over, next level. And I do have a pretty high pain tolerance, so I knew something really wasn't right. I then went to the doctors and they did some blood tests and I came back positive for something called D-DMI. I'm unsure how to pronounce that one. Pretty much meaning that my lungs and body were filling up with blood clots and I had to get rushed to the emergency room. They discovered clots on my legs and all over my chest, all over my lungs on both sides. They just said pretty much to go home and if you're sick or in pain to come back. So then Saturday I pretty much toughed it out for as long as I could until I had really bad chest pains, so I came back in. So the bad chest pains are from my blood clots on my lungs, from me breathing, so they pretty much said it's the equivalent of having broken ribs, so sort of struggling a bit there. Then I stayed last night and I've been doing pretty much every scan and test you can think of. I'm pretty well out of it at the moment. It's been a big emotional ride for me.
Yeah. She said, the amount of clots on my lungs are equivalent to having broken ribs. So it's painful. It's hard to breathe. I'm now medicated. I've never been medicated in my life. As a result of these, I now have internal bleeding, nosebleeds as one of the side effects of my medication, along with a line of other things that I would like to keep private. She said that her condition, first when she went to the doctors, they said, well, this is caused by birth control pill. But she said, I've been on this for over a year without side effects. It began when I took this vaccine. And the doctors don't want to admit that. They don't want to treat it. She said, her mother said, well, if this is the case, then Pfizer needs to tell people that there's a risk if you're on the pill. She said, the girl said, I was informed by doctors and a specialist that this blood clotting was caused by the vaccination. But she said, now my new normal is having a pulmonologist doctor, a cardiologist doctor, blood tests, full body scans, ultrasounds on my heart and lungs over a vaccination that I got to do the right thing. I never wanted to get it because I was genuinely scared of running the risk. I wish I had never gotten it. I wish I could have my healthy body back. You know, when I, as a child, as a toddler, when I swallowed a bottle of medicine, they could pump my stomach out, but you can't pump this toxin out. This is not at all like a vaccine. This is not a dead or weakened pathogen to train your immune system. All of these vaccines, whether they deliver it in encapsulated nanoparticles or whether they piggyback it on the adenovirus, as they do with Johnson & Johnson and AstraZeneca, or whether it is an encapsulated nanoparticle pegylated with polyethylene glycol, as it is with Moderna and Pfizer, in all of them, they're injecting your body with instructions to cause your body to start manufacturing a full, the worst aspect of this coronavirus, that is the toxic and deadly protein spike. They turn your body into a manufacturing facility for that. And that's why you see these escalating blood clots and other blood diseases that are happening. And they're not just coming for the children down to the age of five. They have been coming and are escalating to coming after babies even unborn babies. The Guardian, in terms of, I guess they're being, you know, they need the money. So they're pushing this to get the money. Fears for Australia's pregnant women. Why? From the vaccine? Yeah, you should be afraid because of the vaccine. As vaccine rates lag far beyond the general population. They're wringing their hands that vaccine, that pregnant women are not getting the vaccine because they're reticent. You know, it was 10 years ago that you absolutely did not give any vaccines to pregnant women. You're very careful about what kind of medication you give to pregnant women. You didn't give vaccines to pregnant women. If you go back and look at the FDA bragging about how they take so long to approve drugs, what did they talk about? They talked about thalidomide babies. That came about because thalidomide was given to pregnant women. And because of that, we always had a lot of caution. It would not be done up to about 10 years ago. You didn't give any vaccines to pregnant women. Then when they began ignoring that about 10 years ago, now they are demanding that you get an untested experimental drug that has killed and injured more people than all of the other shots that people have been given over the last 30 years combined. Demanding it. The clinical director of Women's and Children's Health at St. George Hospital in Sydney said 6 weeks ago he surveyed 22 women in the hospital's postnatal ward who had just given birth. Just three of them were fully vaccinated. 14 had received one dose. He's just really upset about that. So 63% of them had gotten a single dose, 14% of them had gotten a double dose, and 23% had not gotten anything at all. They were clean. I can't have that. Can't have that. He then surveyed 60 women who came through the hospital's antenatal clinic, in other words, pre-birth, found that 38% of them had not started the vaccination. Oh, he is upset. Pregnant women not getting an experimental proven dangerous injection. And then this article from The Guardian says that, and listen to this bold-faced lie, global surveillance data from large numbers of pregnant women have not identified any significant safety concerns given any stage of pregnancy. That's an absolute lie. There are several thousand just in the U.S. that have had miscarriages immediately. I've talked about that. They go on to say, furthermore, there is also evidence of antibody in cord blood and in breast milk, which offer protection to infants through passive immunity. Well, I've also talked about how nursing mothers saw their kids breaking out in rashes, or they saw them having nervous twitches. You even see in that Big Pharma song video that I play so often, shows a picture of a baby that just can't stop shaking. That's happening in most cases from them either getting the uptake. You know, if you can get antibodies through this, you can also get the spikes, and that's what's happening. I've talked about many of these cases. In one particular case, and there were several of these types of cases, where the breastfeeding mother saw rashes, saw twitching that couldn't be stopped with a child. They couldn't figure out what it was because it can't be the vaccine. Well, we've never seen anything like this before. It can't be the vaccine. And just before she took the second dose, she stopped, and the rashes and the twitching stopped. She got the second dose, and it started with a vengeance after that again. They're passing it through breast milk. They're passing it to the child before the child has been born. No doubt about it. As I mentioned at the beginning of the program, the new attacks that are coming to the unvaccinated, CNN is very happy about this. Families could be denied death benefits if their unvaccinated loved one dies. You see, we have the financial incentives from the Trump administration that if you can get, as a hospital, if you can get a positive test on somebody with a PCR test that they magnify by a trillion times, if you get a positive test, you can get a $13,000 bonus. But guess what? If somebody dies with a positive PCR test, then the insurance company can save the death benefits. That's much more than $13,000. And the biggest and first to do it, but not the only one, CNN's got a lot of different jurisdictions where this is already being done. The biggest one is New York's Metropolitan Transportation Authority. People run the subways, the buses, the commuter rail lines. they had set up a death benefit for the employees. They said, well, we're going to make you keep working because you're essential personnel. We're afraid you're going to die from COVID. So we will set up something to pay a $500,000 death benefit if you die from COVID. And what they're doing now is saying, oh, by the way, we'll still pay that $500,000 death benefit, but not if you're unvaccinated. In Massachusetts, the New Bedford City Council there sought to extend the accidental death benefits to city employees who died of COVID, but the mayor would not sign it because it didn't prohibit payments if the worker was unvaccinated. This is just the beginning of it. I mean, we have seen over and over again doctors in emergency rooms saying, well, if somebody comes in here and they're unvaccinated, I'm going to let them die. They deserve to die. They made that decision before. Have you ever said somebody who has heart disease or lung cancer and they're a chronic smoker, have you ever said, well, they deserve to die. I'm not going to give them any treatment. You've never done that before. This is being weaponized. He said, they talk about this. So the MTA is the biggest one. They've had 173 MTA workers who tested positive for COVID and died. Five of those deaths occurred after June the 1st of this year when the policy changed. We're not aware of whether or not they've been vaccinated, said an MTA spokesperson of the five workers who died since the policy took effect. So we're not sure if we're going to withhold their money or not from their family. And this was a shift that other policy was put in April of 2020. So that will be the next thing. You know, just as you should not be given any medical care if you're unvaccinated because you are filthy animals, your family should not collect any death benefits if they can get a positive PCR test. They said the so-called line of duty or accidental death and dismemberment policies, we're not going to apply that. But they will apply that to other things. They're going to blame everything on the unvaccinated. Supply chain issues will be blamed on the unvaccinated. Your death from whatever cause will be blamed on you if they can get a positive PCR test and say that you died of COVID, because nobody dies. Everybody who died with COVID with a positive PCR test, let's just put it that way. You don't even have to have COVID to have a positive PCR test. But if you die with a positive PCR test, you died from COVID. It's just, that's been established. I would just say to these companies that are out there doing it, and you should say this to the companies that are leaning on you. We just had a pro-life nurse who had been fired for refusing to cooperate with abortion. She's just now finally won her court battle. She's been fighting them since 2015 for 6 years. This is the 17th Judicial Circuit Court in Winnebago County, Illinois, ruled in favor of the woman, determining that her firing over her refusal to provide abortion and contraceptive services due to her religious beliefs was unlawful. Let me just say, this is a warning to all these companies who want to ignore the First Amendment, who want to ignore the Civil Rights Act of 64, who want to ignore the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. You want to ignore all of those things? It may be a while, but sooner or later, God's going to cut you down, and sooner or later, the courts will cut you down as well. All of these corporations, Mercedes and Raytheon, all the rest of these, the airlines, you're going to get cut down. And I think we need to see this as well with the medical exemptions. You know, we have, even already in law, the Americans with Disabilities Act. You got the same kind of liability as if you refuse to do a wheelchair ramp and somebody with a wheelchair is trying to negotiate down the stairs and goes down several flights of stairs and gets killed or severely injured. You have the same kind of liability for that as well. It's going to be a long fight, but they're going to lose. Medical professionals should never be forced to engage in or to promote activities that violate their beliefs or convictions. And that applies to anyone under our system of law. But we have this being done from one company after the other. And we see this happening as they have been changing the definition of the vaccine. Well, another article from talking about emails showing how, and I've shown you many times how they have radically changed the definition of a vaccine Merriam-Webster's dictionary. They go in, and first they had the standard definition of a vaccine, something essentially to train your immune system. And then they had natural immunity, and they talked about that. Then they got rid of the natural immunity. Then they started putting in a lot of examples for mRNA to tell everybody that mRNA really is a vaccine. And they expanded the definition from a single sentence that was about a line and a half to a half of a page by putting in all these definitions. Why is it that even Webster's dictionary is owned by the pharmaceutical companies? Because they're all doing what the government wants them to do. It's not just about the profits of Pfizer and these people. It is what the government wants to do. The government has a depopulation agenda. And that is the only thing that matters to these people. But now under a FOIA request, they've now found, I guess we could call this, you know, we had climate gate. Maybe we could call this COVID gate. We should. So you have in August of 2021, a CDC employee cited two complaints that, quote, right-wing COVID 19 deniers are using your vaccine definition to argue that mRNA vaccines are not vaccines, putting pressure on them to change the definition of the vaccine. This is putting pressure on the CDC to change the vaccines. And I imagine we could probably, if we had the FOIA request, we could probably find the same thing being done with the people who run the dictionary as well. I need to update this page, said one of the vaccines. Hi, yes, I know I need to update this page since these definitions are outdated and they're being used by some to say that COVID-19 vaccines are not vaccines per the CDC's own definition. See, the problem with all of this is that they had already slipped this thing through in December of 2019 before anybody was talking about any of this stuff, before anybody was talking about a COVID-19 pandemic. They went through and very subtly changed the definition of a vaccine. As I pointed out, it was about page 500 and something of a 700 and some odd page funding bill. They put in a little statement there. And they said, because prior to that, you had an exemption saying that any synthesized polypeptides would not be included in the definition of a vaccine. Well, that's what the mRNAs are. They're synthesized polypeptides. And so what they did was they just put a little line in there, page 500 out of 700 pages, 500-something out of 700-something pages. They put a little single line in there saying, we're striking that out of the definition. So there is no exception. You know, if we say it's a vaccine, it's a vaccine. There's no exception for mRNA stuff. And the people who looked at that, if they even saw that, would not have made the connection to mRNA. So it already legally covered that. It's the type of thing that I imagine you could probably find Fauci involved in, because he's the one that's been giving them the legal cover all of this time, and he would have known to do it in a very subtle way. Very subtle way. Let's take a look at what is happening with some of the toxic meds. Glenn Greenwald points out how important it is for them to protect Fauci, even to the extent that the Washington Post prepared a hit piece on the group that exposed his experimentation on puppies. And the Washington Post had always lauded this group. That group was called the White Coat Waste Group. As Glenn Greenwald points out, in his article that he has on Substack, because, you know, if you tell the truth, you can't work for a news organization. Not even the alt news will let you do that. So he writes for Substack, and he said, in the past, the Washington Post had even talked about the fact that the White Coat Waste Project was able to get past this partisanship, right? Because everything is now partisan. Well, if you criticize the vaccines, you must be a Republican or whatever, or you're... You cannot see that both or say that both Trump and Biden are responsible. No, it's got to be one or the other, and it's got to be the party that I don't like. You know, it's all Biden's fault. It's not Trump's fault. It was great. You know, he produced some miracle stuff. It's not his fault if you're a Republican. Vice versa, if you go the other way. So what they were saying on the Post was that this White Coat Waste Project, they said they got the animal rights people, which are typically left-wing, PETA and that type of thing, And so they would talk about animal cruelty, and then they would talk about government waste to get the conservatives. And I said, that's brilliant. You've been able to transcend this partisan blindness, this partisan divide. And so the Washington Post had talked about them in that way until this happened. And now, he says, now their work is a threat to Fauci, says Glenn Greenwald. And he said, the Post has now suddenly demanded to look at all the financial documents from this group, the White Coat Waste Project. And when it turned up, nothing. They then demanded that these people they'd previously praised have to pledge not to take any pro-Trump donations. He further commented on Twitter. He says, corporate media outlets like the Washington Post always vehemently and angrily deny that they have a political agenda. They insist that they do nothing, that they just do nonpartisan reporting. Nobody believes them anymore, or few do. But rarely do we see such a vivid case of how they actually work. He said, yesterday, White Coat Waste had a 30-minute call with a reporter from the Post, Beth Reinhard, and a health reporter, and they told the group that any reporting reflecting negatively on Fauci could undermine his COVID efforts, and it could cause a backlog of calls to the NIH. That is their mindset. Just take the Trump juice, right? Because, see, while it was brilliant in the past that the White Coat Waste Project could transcend partisanship and they could have the people who didn't like government waste and the people who didn't like animal cruelty could come together and oppose this. They understand that. And you know what? The government understands the fact that Republicans will lay down and not criticize something when it's done by Trump or done by Nixon. They can get things done by those guys that they couldn't get done by Biden. And then once that foundation is laid, they can bring in Biden. And although the people on the right will then scream bloody murder when they never said anything when it was being done by their guy, the left will provide cover for him. So he points out that, with these puppy experiments we've talked about, as bad as they were, he said they specifically look for beagles, because they're considered to be ideal. They're docile. They trust humans. The very traits that have made them such loving and loyal companions to humans are the ones that humans exploit to best manipulate them in labs. The very best traits that humans have are the ones that are selected by the politicians to exploit. The trust, the patriotism. He says there are then force-fed laundry detergents, pesticides, industrial chemicals to the point of continuous vomiting and death, injected with lethal pathogens like salmonella or rabies. They're given artificial sweeteners to the extent, intravenously, until the extent that their testicles shrink up before they're killed. Did you know that happens with artificial sweeteners? Yeah. Holes are then drilled into some of their skulls so viruses can be injected into their brains. All of this is perfectly legal. They're frequently bred deliberately to have crippling, excruciating diseases, or sometimes are brought into life just to have their organs, their eyes, and other body parts removed and studied. Now, we know that that happens to babies. They're brought into this life in order to have their organs removed while they're alive. And the same thing is being done by the puppies. It's being done by the National Institute of Health, by the FDA, by the University of Pittsburgh, which, by the way, has a couple of people on this advisory panel saying it's okay to inject young kids with these Trump shots. So we don't care about the human babies. We should care about the dogs as well, but we don't care about the human babies at all. Nobody is even talking about that. It's just become an issue for the Washington Post now. After they praised this organization for transcending the partisan divide, the Post comes in with their partisan angle and threatens them. And this group gave them spreadsheets. They gave them IRS. They gave them income tax forms. They gave them Schedule Bs and the rest of the stuff. So there was absolutely nothing there. And so they made them pledge that they're not going to take any Trump money. because the most important thing for the Washington Post is to protect Fauci. And we saw this with Trump, too, didn't we? Remember the interview that I played for you a couple of days ago when Judge Jeanine talked to him over the weekend, his longtime friend? She said, you know, we got people who were heroes. Now they're losing their job. Shouldn't you have fired Fauci instead? Trump defended Fauci. He said, no. He says, it's not him. It's the Biden administration. See how he uses a partisanship to deceive you, to divide you? And do you see how, just like the Washington Post, Donald Trump will always defend Fauci? That's it for the broadcast. Thank you for listening. Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.